This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds. Thanks for joining me. This is a Brightside Home Theater podcast, the podcast that talks about what you do in your theater. Once your theater has been built, what do you do in it? What movies do you watch? What scenes do you enjoy? Every week I analyze, dissect maybe a movie, a bunch of movies, whatever I did in my theater that week. And this week I was lucky enough to be joined by Tom Andry from AV Rant. We sat down on the eve of his 700th episode, by the way. I thought I was just going to get him in and be able to talk to him a little bit about Jurassic Park because he had mentioned before, well, there's a backstory to it and we'll talk about that. And there's even more of a backstory to it than I even thought when I asked him to join me. As you can see by the time on this, we talked for over 2.5 hours. What you're about to hear, completely unedited. We go off on tangents. We just totally nerd out on home theater, AV, Tom's history in AV. I had a blast. I'm not going to talk about any questions or comments from Twitter and email this week because this is so long. I just wanted to get right to the sit down. But keep those questions and comments coming. I really appreciate it. You can tweet at me at BrightsideHT or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. Again, keep those questions, comments, scenes, movies, everything. Keep that coming. I really appreciate it. But let's just get right to it. My sit down with Tom Andry from AV Rant. It's a big, big day. I'm here with George Lucas. I've been talking about this for weeks. Tom Andry from AV Rant. How you doing, Tom?
Fine. I don't know about the George Lucas part, but fine.
What, you don't like that?
I mean, don't mind. I mean, Star Wars was great, and then things sort of have been slowly going off the rails ever since then, it seems to me. But I appreciate the auteur nod, though. It's very flattering. I don't know that it's all that deserved, but it's very flattering. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It is well deserved, though. George Lucas is what started my home theater adventures. Got into movies loving Star Wars, and honestly, my podcast adventures started a little before I discovered you guys, but you were the first AV podcast I started listening to.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was like, and then you got back onto Twitter, and you had followed me, so I was like, oh, I told my buddy John in that podcast, I was like, I got followed by Tom Andry, oh my God.
I haven't opened up Twitter. I opened up Twitter like 3 or 4 times in the last maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I was, I just had better things to do with my time. And every time I went on, I was like, wow, people are super angry. I don't know that I can. And, you know, I did Twitter a lot when I was publishing my books, trying to get an agent. And I was doing a lot of networking that way. And then after I decided that that wasn't going to work for me, I just sort of stopped twittering. So yes, I came on, I saw your post, or saw your name pop up, and I was like, oh, that's that podcast that Rob's always talking about. I should randomly hit this follow button.
There you go.
Surely nothing can come from that.
Well, not everything's a cesspool there. That's where I got Brightside from. Yeah. My buddy and I started. It was supposed to be a comic books home theater podcast, and that didn't mesh too well. So we did, for a year, we did Brightside Chat, which is all comic books. And then a year later, which was back in October, I started Brightside Home Theater.
Because my brother just published a comic book. I meant to send you that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, just recently, actually.
Under who?
I don't know. It wasn't Marvel or DC. It's an indie.
Right.
It's one of the indie
like
ones.
Like Image or... I don't know if it was Image,
something like that, but I will send you a link to it
awesome.
After the podcast, and you can take a look at it. It's zombie-esque, I guess, maybe?
Those are out there.
Yeah. I think it's called Resonant or Resonance, something like
that. Oh, okay.
So check it out.
Cool. Yeah, I will. You're a writer. He's a writer. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we both write. He's been actually, the way he got into comic books is he lived in San Diego for a number of years when he went to San Diego State. And somehow along the way, he got hooked up with Walking Dead guys.
Oh, wow.
And that was, you know, and for years he would go to Comic Cons and man their booth. That was just like, I don't know if they really paid him or anything, but they would ship him around to go do stuff like that. And then from there, he made enough contacts to finally write his own book, and it just came out. So he's super excited about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely look at that.
So the AV Comics podcast, it didn't work out. Let's start the AV podcast with a talk about comics.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tom bringing it full circle over here.
Yeah. So. See, works perfect. So let me ask you this. This is the first question that I had getting you here. Where did you come up with AV Rant, the name?
Okay. So I'm going to first of all say I don't remember. But because I'm not exactly sure, but to give you the history of AV Rant, Clint DeBoer, who at the time was the editor-in-chief of Audioholics.com, he came to me because I was associate editor, was writing there a lot, and he came to me and said, you should do a podcast. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I could do that. I have a background that's in acting, and I've got a perfect face for radio and a decent voice for it. So I, he said, you would be great at this. You know, because I was the guy, I wrote the editorials that were funny and that would make the guys laugh, and him and Gene. And he thought that that would be a pretty good mix. So I wanted to do a podcast by myself. I didn't want to have anybody else. I didn't want to have another person with me because I just thought that was going to be too much work. And then, hey, I can do this thing by myself. So we did three or maybe more test episodes, and I did one by myself. And then he found me. I think I did one with him, and I did one with Dina, Dina was my first podcast partner. Spoiler alert. And she was the wife of one of Clint's best friends. And she knew just enough about home theater to be dangerous.
Okay.
Which was perfect.
Yeah.
So I got to explain things to her, and through that we
could have conversations.
And the rant part of it just came from, you know, I was always the one that they would say, hey Tom, look at this product. Doesn't this make you angry? And I'm like, yeah, that's dumb. He goes, you should write an editorial about that. I'm like, I'm gonna. And that's how AV Rant came. Now, Clint may have come up with a name. I may have come up with a name. I want to say it was Clint that came up with that name. And I think it was mostly because he could find the domain. So it was sort of he had a number of things in mind, and the domain was available, and that's why we went with AV Rant. But it works as far as my personality and how the podcast was for the first five or so years was a lot of, I would just try to find something that I could get irritated about and then talk about it and talk to Dina about it. And then later on Liz. And then now of course, Rob.
That's great. Cause when I first started listening, it's like, I didn't get, obviously when you first click on it, I didn't get what that meant. And then as you know, you listen to more and more episodes, your personality comes out and you're like, oh, okay. And it's perfect in the way that you go on your little rants, but it's not, you know, vicious or anything like that.
No. I get irritated about things in the industry more often than not. I very rarely get irritated at people, but just like silly things that the industry does that doesn't make that to me doesn't make any sense. You know, a lot of misinformation that's out there. Of course, the overpriced cables and separate DACs and cable elevators and tiny little clocks that they'll try to push on you to tell you that it'll make your sound better, when there's real science that tells you exactly how you can make your sound better. Stuff like that irritates me, and I'll go off on specific companies. But generally speaking, there'll be something that just kind of pushes my buttons, and I'll say something about it. But yeah, I try not to be. I try as much as possible to keep that anger or that part of it as polite as you can, and still call it a rant.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob is a good balance.
Right.
It's, he has that, what, Canadian stereotype?
And Rob is very genuine. The way is on the podcast is the way he is in real life. There he is. There's very little difference between Rob on the podcast and Rob in real life. I have had, Rob, I hope that your listeners, if they aren't too bored by all of this behind the scenes, behind the baseball or inside baseball talk or whatever. But, if you don't know, Rob is, you know, from Canada. He lives, in BC, British Columbia, and, has that sort of even keel or whatever. But, I have seen Rob as angry as he is. You know, he's called me in the middle of the night, like at 1 a.m. and said, "Tom, I've just got to unload on somebody and you're the guy." I'm like, "Okay, let's go." And then at the end of it, I'm like, "Yeah, that was just really nice. Thank you." I mean, it was very pleasant. It's like, I'm very surprised I haven't heard Rob curse all that much, but you know, I still haven't. So I mean,
he did recently.
He is. Oh yes, I know. He was very irritated. Yes, yeah. On Twitter, he made the deal about it. So, but it is. He's a very nice guy. He's very genuine, and he just loves AV. He just loves home theater. You know, he just absolutely loves it.
He amazes me. He amazes me with his info and. I get, like, you get the questions and he can do a little bit of research and stuff, but the stuff he comes, you know, it's off the cuff. He knows his stuff, as you do too, but he's great to talk. I started tweeting at him my questions a while ago and he gets right back to you. He's great.
Yes.
He's very nice, very nice guy. Like you said, he's very genuine.
The stuff that Rob knows, and it's all information that's out there, but you know, he's able, because of his years of experience with it, to take the information that you might look at and say, I don't know if I should trust this or whatever. And he can actually distill it down immediately with all the other stuff he says. He goes, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." Or, "No, this doesn't make sense." That sort of thing. I mean, just like you guys, if I'm at Best Buy and I don't feel like, you know, trying to do some research or whatever, I'm like, I'll just text Rob. "Hey, Rob. which of these should I buy? Oh, you should buy this one. Okay, thank you." And you know, I mean, he'll get back to you in like 10 minutes. It's great. But he's super knowledgeable and he loves it. He loves that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, for all the, you know, most of the years the podcast has been around, though it's quickly becoming the part, we're quickly coming up to the year when I think Rob will be on the podcast half the time the podcast has been around. But, I was the expert and that was a fine, role for me. I had no problems with that. But Rob really likes being, you know, the knowledgeable one, the expert. And hey, you know, it's a lot of work to do what he does.
Yeah.
And he deserves all the praise and the accolades for doing it. And I certainly, you know, don't mind riding his coattails a little bit in this way. I like being the color commentator a lot more than I like having to do all that research.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if anybody listening doesn't know who we're talking about, we're talking about AV Rant. This is Tom Andrey and Rob, his partner, Rob H over there. I'm pretty sure most of my listeners know you guys because that's where I'm getting my listeners from. It's like people will be like, "Oh, I've heard
of you." Tell your friends.
Yeah, exactly. They all show up and they're like, "Oh, we heard of you from either this podcast or AV Rant." I'm like, I guarantee it's AV Rant because that other one doesn't know who I am. So, but yeah, you guys have been great to me. I really appreciate it. And I know, and I love I don't know who he is, but I guess it's good. So, but well, now I mean, you know who I am.
Now I know who you are, and I still haven't listened to your podcast. So I meant to ask you before we started, what's the, you know, what's the flavor of this podcast? I mean, are you guys, is it mature? You know, is it all ages? I mean,
all ages. Well,
where should I put my language? All right.
All ages.
Fine. My podcast is too. That's fine. Yep. But I've been on podcasts that aren't, and it's funny. I'm always like, "Ooh, I get to curse." And then I get on the podcast and I don't curse. I'm like, "Huh."
Right.
But,
I'm all ages because I've always, my kids are older now, but when I was listening to podcasts and my kids were even in high school and stuff, I've always been like, you know, you're driving along listening and then somebody says something and might go down a slippery slope that you're in the car with your kids going, "Don't go down, don't talk about that," or something. So, I like to steer away from that just to make it, you know, more, especially when you're talking AV or comic books or something.
Right.
I don't want, you know, that's a family type thing. So
I don't really see the need for it. I never have. At the very beginning. Now, one of the reasons the podcast, my podcast, is that way is Clint was and is a very religious person, and that was a non-starter for him. There was no blue language. At the time when I started my podcast, all podcasts were like R-rated. All of them were. There was nothing that was 100% wholesome. They were all like Howard Stern, but that you could curse.
Right.
And those were all the popular ones. And I was like, maybe we should go that way. And Clint was like, nah. No, I'm producing, you're doing it, and no. Like, okay, that's fine. And I'm glad. I'm glad, because I definitely prefer it this way. Definitely do.
Well, it makes it more palatable to everybody, because nobody ever said, I wish there was swearing there.
And I get accused of it, like, once or twice a year. I'll get somebody that says, you said this on your podcast. I'm like, no, I didn't.
Really?
You may have heard it, but I didn't say it. Right. I didn't say it. I've been doing this long enough that I know. I mean, I may say you're like your mom's version of that bad word that you think you're saying you heard, but I did not say it. My mom was the queen and is still the queen of almost cursing.
Yeah. Almost.
You're like, oh, it's alliteration, mom, but we all know what you're really saying. So,
yeah. Let's get to probably the latest podcast that you had, the really, really good Lee Overstreet, the SVS Subwoofers.
Yeah.
I would love, I mean, I think it's actually very appropriate for this movie that we're going to talk about too.
Yeah.
How satisfying was that for you? First off, because talk about, before you can answer, your frustration level over the years listening to him say, knowing what you know,
right,
listening to him say, I don't need them. Even I was like, no, you don't know. The thing is, he didn't know what he didn't know.
Right. You don't know what you don't know. It is true. So when SVS contacted me and said, and asked me to review their subwoofers, and like all of you out there, you know, somebody says, would you like better subwoofers than you have right now? The answer is yes, I would. And I would love to have their PC-2000s in here. I have the equivalent of the PC-2000, but two or three generations back. You know, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It doesn't, it has a, you know, mine have a grill on top, which always scare me because, you know, the ports actually fire up through the grill.
Yep.
And I'm always afraid somebody's going to put their drink on there and then spill it and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. Not that I, whatever, but, I could have said yes, and I could have done a review, and they would have been perfectly happy, and they would have lived here, and that would have been it. That would have been it. I had no problems with that. But the review, if I'm going to be honest, and I told them this in the email, I said, if I review your subwoofers, I'm going to say, yep, they sound just like the old ones I had. Because I'm not going to be pushing them past their limits. I'm not going to be, you know, they're already as placed perfectly as they're going to be in my room. There's not going to be a review to be that you guys are going to really be happy with. So my first thought was Lee, and it was one of those sort of the Simpsons moments, like mwah. It was the guy, Mr. what's his name, Smithers, or no,
yeah,
Smithers,
yeah, Smithers.
Yeah, so it's just I was so like, oh my god, I'm gonna get Lee to do this, it's gonna be awesome. So I called him and asked him if he would be willing, and he goes, oh no, you know, we can't have too big of whatever. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care, they're sending you subs. And then it sort of stalled out for a while or whatever, but I stayed completely out of it. I didn't call him. I didn't get any updates. I didn't ask him how he liked them. I didn't care. I was not interested in talking to him about it until the podcast. I did call him a couple of times to find out how he's doing, because he got sick. We don't know because he didn't get tested, but we're pretty sure he had COVID. So he was out for, you know, almost a month, just recuperating from that. And then we had him on the podcast, and to have him finally admit that his quote unquote full range speakers were both not full range and inadequate for the task at hand, which was playing low bass, in subsonic bass was extremely gratifying. It is just like anybody else who's an expert at something, hearing somebody who's not an expert be so very wrong, but so very adamant about it, that when you finally get through to them, they're like, oh yeah, well, I guess you had a point. Yeah. You think, Lee? You think I had a point? Are you sure? You don't want to like write it down in a note and then like send it to me? How about this? How about we go dig up the time capsule I put in my backyard that has, you know, all of your feelings about how you didn't need a subwoofer, and let's just read through them together and let's all bask in the glow of me being right. So, no, I mean, I guess I had some positive emotions about it. I guess that's the way I would describe it. I had a good feeling. It was fuzzy, a little fuzzy.
It was such a great podcast. SVS must be ecstatic. They couldn't have asked for a better podcast/commercial. I mean,
there have been times that companies have approached me, including SVS, for advertising, and I have thought about it a lot about having advertising on my podcast, and it would, you know, they would be happy to do it and happy to make, you know, they'd make money. We would make money, which would be great for me and Rob. But I just have such a hard time accepting money from the people that whose products I am talking about. And
right.
If SVS made a bad sub tomorrow, I would say. And even if they were paying me, I would still say it was a bad sub. If Aperion Audio was giving me money, I would still say their super tweeter is a piece of garbage that they shouldn't be selling. I'm embarrassed to recommend. When I have to talk about their speakers, which I do like, I always have to like put the little asterisk on it that says, yeah, but they sell a super tweeter. Don't buy that thing.
Right.
No matter what they tell you. So I like not having to not worrying about people thinking there's a conflict of interest.
Right.
But, you know, SVS is, it is a commercial for them, but only because their product is so good. Like, there is very little bad to say about SVS. The only time I can really start saying that SVS is not my first choice is when you get into the higher, price brackets, and then you start saying you can get something cheaper that doesn't look as good, doesn't have as much functionality, but will play just as low, if not lower, and maybe even plays louder. It's just a big, big, ugly box. With the SVS, you're then paying for additional things on top of that. But their first two levels, at the very least, are like out of the park value, and it's so easy to recommend them. So the SB2000s that pros that Lee was reviewing are just a phenomenal subs. They're just insanely good and insanely good value. So it's a really, really nice product. So it was a fun podcast to do, and it was a fun review to do. So I was really glad. I was really pleased with the way it came out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was a blast to listen to. Lee was, I mean, you can just hear it in his voice, how excited he was about it, and then asking listeners for suggestions and stuff. I actually have two PB2000s.
Okay.
In my room. And
them's big.
Yeah, they are.
those are not diminutive subs on any metric that I can think of. They are not small.
Nope. But I wanted that, like, oh man, since the early 90s, I knew I wanted something to get below 20.
Oh yeah, me too.
And it was, back then it was Velodyne, remember?
Yep.
And it's like,
yep.
And it just seemed, the price just seemed so far out of reach.
Right, so the digital drive series that they had when they came out with those, I mean, just insanely good subs. But, you know, what we say in the podcast all the time is you can have small, you can have cheap, and you can have low. Pick two. You can't have, and the Velodynes played low and they were small, which means they couldn't be cheap, and they weren't. They were, you know, starting $1,800. You know,
yeah, I think thousands around there. Of dollars that you
and that's. And the 12s were so much better than the 10s, and the 15 was so much better than the 12, but the price differences were just insane. I mean, you got a good product, but you were paying for marketing, and you were paying for, you know, the dealers, you know, how much the dealer was making on top of it. And they were really, if you have a old Velodyne sub. They're fantastic. My parents owned one. I picked one out for my parents, and it is a great sub. When they ended up selling it, or I think when they moved out of their last house, they left all the home theater gear there as part of the deal. But
jeez,
it was a great, great sub. I mean, I really like Velodyne subs, but they were they were pricey. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. And at the time, you know, I was in my early 20s, and sure, you don't have a lot of money. I mean, $1,800, it was a sub or a car. You know, I'm like, I kind of got to get to work. So, and when you're paying $50 a week for a Laserdisc, it's like, I need a job.
Right.
But yeah, so it's subs. I think the technology has come down. I've learned a ton from you guys because I built my theater in 2001. Started listening to you guys a few years ago, and I started learning how much has really changed.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the technologies and obviously subwoofers and everything like that. The hobby itself to me is the upgrading. You know, like going and saying like, oh, like I upgraded my subs. I don't know if I'll ever upgrade those again because they are just so big and so they're way, way more power than I needed in that room. But sure, I think that's why you guys, your podcast is so popular, is like where all the listeners are people that are hands-on, that want to deal with their rooms on their own. You're not, I don't think you have any listeners that are like hiring somebody to come in and put in a whole theater.
Not very often. Occasionally we'll get somebody who's dealing with a installer, and they're like, well, they want me to put these speakers in these positions. What do you think? We're like,
oh, that's got to be tough.
Yeah. Okay. So here's why everything they said was wrong, and here's why they said it. You know, because there's a couple of real reasons why installers do some of the things that they do, and very, very. And I try to think the best of people, even the salespeople, you know, because we can talk about this maybe later, but you know, when I got into home theater, it was because I knew two or three guys that worked at. It's now defunct. It was like the Good Guys or the Good something. It was in California. Yeah. And it is now defunct. But they worked there, and they were super into home theater. And, you know, these guys, you know, were basically being taught by the companies. The companies would come in and say, this is why our product is good. This is what you can do to sell it. And this is why it's such, you know, this is why it's better than everything else. They don't know.
No,
you know, they're not out there doing the research. They're being told this is true, and they're like, okay, well, it must be true then. And they're out there selling stuff for that reason. But you know, when people come to my podcast, my one goal is to eliminate as much as possible buyer's remorse, and secondarily, or maybe on the same level, is to save people as much money as humanly possible. I cannot tell you how many times in the home theater world I have bought something and gotten it home and looked at it and went, this is not what I really wanted. What I really wanted was 10% more, and I cheaped out, and now I'm going to have to live with this thing and I'm unhappy. So I don't want people to do that. But I also don't want them to go out there and buy, this happened just recently. Somebody was asking us if they should buy a PC 4000 or something from SVS for this tiny room. And they're like, well, let me make sure I have enough headroom. I'm like, dude, you're not even going to be able to turn it on. I mean, the difference between on and off, that's where your volume level would have to be. It's you're way overbuying. So I want to convince that person to buy the appropriate sub for their room, or their appropriate speaker, or the appropriate headphone, or the appropriate screen, or appropriate projector for their space. For what they want to do, so that, and educate them enough so that when they buy it, they know that they got exactly what they wanted, so that afterwards they're not thinking, God, I wish I had done X, or I wish I had bought Y. And the, you know, I think maybe 30% of our questions are people who have, I was reading this on the forums and they said I should have done this, and, you know, should I have done this? Yeah, it's like inflicted buyer's remorse. Like, no, don't read forums. Stop it.
Yeah, that's my projector guy that calibrates my projector that I've known since 2002, 2001, 2002. He's done all of my stuff. I've become good friends with him, and he tells me all the time. I'll be like, oh, what's the latest? And I'll say, I saw this. And he goes, don't read that.
Yeah.
It's like, don't. I'll set you up. Let me know when you want to do something. I'll set you up. Don't do that. I was like, okay.
Right.
Because it's all sales stuff.
It is. And there's nothing wrong with that either, to a certain extent. I mean, sales is what makes the world go around. And people who have money but not the time to do the research, or not the inclination to do the research, you know, they want to be sold. They want to be sold too, and they want to be feel like they got quality. And if that's if they want, you know, all Sony gear because it makes them feel happy, I got no problems with that. You know, but if you ask me, I'm going to tell you the truth about whatever it is that you're buying, or what you're thinking about, or what rumor you read on AVS forum.
Yeah. You said you had mentioned that you had some buddies that worked at that, what is it, Good Guys or whatever?
Good. I cannot for the life of me remember that place. Yeah. But they were super into home theater. So, ironically.
Yes.
I had gotten the VHS widescreen of Jurassic Park.
Read your bio on Audioholics. And that's why I was going there, and you went there. Perfect.
Yeah. So that's I got that VHS, and I watched it at my apartment, and these guys showed up, and I can't remember why they showed up over there, but they lived in the same apartment building, and they would just, it was insane. They listened to movies and TV shows and stuff at insane volumes at all hours of day or night, and they only had one neighbor, and the neighbor was this like immigrant family or whatever, who was either unwilling to or afraid to report them or complain. So they got away with this stuff for years, and they eventually moved to a different apartment. And when I went to visit them there, like, I had to whisper the entire time. It was like karma totally caught up to them. But that night, I showed up at, they came over and they said, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I just finished watching Jurassic Park on the widescreen version of Jurassic Park. They go, oh, and then we started talking about the difference between widescreen or not. And they're like, oh, you kind of know what you're talking about. I didn't. I knew a little bit, but they're like, oh, you should come watch it at our house. I'm like, I just watched it. He goes, no, you didn't. Come watch it at our house. And they had this huge TV. This was way before flat screen. So it's probably
32 inch.
Yeah. 32, 36 inch CRT.
Right.
Right. But they had a massive subwoofer, and they had surround sound. And I was like, what am I experiencing right now? This is insane. First of all, I was terrified that the police were going to show up because of how loud it was. And it was like 11 o'clock at night, but I watched that movie. And I was like, man, this is nuts. I absolutely have to have this. And that was years before I actually got my full-fledged system. What I ended up doing was I ended up buying a motorcycle. And I bought this motorcycle because I lived in San Francisco. I don't know what I was thinking. I'd never ridden a motorcycle before. I had no idea what I was doing. Never taken a class.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? So I got the motorcycle. I bought it from this guy. And he took my money, and he put me on the motorcycle. And kind of told me what to do, and then I said okay, and then he let me go, and I went through this parking lot, immediately laid it down and slid it underneath the car.
Oh jeez.
So I pulled it out, and he said, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. And then I parked it, and I didn't touch it again. And I ended up, to those same guys I was talking about earlier with Jurassic Park, I ended up trading it for a 5.0 system with a receiver, with an old receiver of theirs. And that was my first system. It was like three front speakers, maybe it was a 4.0. Two front speakers, two rear speakers, not matched in any way, shape, or form, and a receiver. And I traded that for that, and I was like, I'm out. That's what I lived with for years, slowly adding. I think I added the center channel when it broke, and then I added I ended up getting rid of the surrounds because one of them had a ripped woofer or ripped surround. Ended up getting some Bose from a girlfriend, bought them for me for my birthday. which at the time, you know, I didn't know any better.
Yep.
I thought they worked fantastic. So those ended up going up front, and then they put the other speakers, which were probably better, as surrounds. And I had a, I mean, it was just a Frankenstein system. And
yeah,
that's what I lived with for years and years and years. And when I got married to my wife, I said, listen, one day I want to have a real system. I want to have a real system with real speakers. I want to get new stuff. And she said, well, you know, we gotta get ourselves set financially. I said, okay. So years went by, and I still had this little Frankenstein system, and we moved out to Florida, and she got a new job, and I got a new job, and we were working, and I was doing this thing I tell people to do on my podcast, which is I had an Excel spreadsheet, and I would read the forums, and I would search, you know, search late into the night, you know, and just, you know, reading reviews of things, and I would pick things and decide which one I wanted more and what was the best value and blah, blah, blah. And I had my list of what I was going to buy. And one day, you know, every day at dinner, I would kind of like bring up, you know, this is why this is important. Let's talk a little bit about speakers. Well, I won't talk. You know, I just kind of like keep bringing it up. And then one day she goes, you know, I guess we have enough. I think we're doing well enough. You could probably order those speakers now, because she knew how much I was going to spend, and she had been talking about all that stuff. I guess we could. And we were lying in bed, and I got up and walked out and went to the office and basically pressed send on the order. And she came looking for me. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just ordered the speakers. She's like, are you serious? I'm like, you said I could. So I did. I ordered the speakers. She's like, Okay. I mean, that's how passionate I was about it. You know, it was not something that happened overnight. I didn't one day decide I wanted to have I had this moment, and then over probably a decade, it took me to get a real system. And that system directly led to me working for Audioholics.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've had the same speakers right up until this Christmas. I asked you guys on some speakers, and I'd love to do RBHs. I loved your review of them, but I just can't afford that right now. And my wife ended up grabbing me the NHT upgrades because I had NHTs to begin with. And I've had those since 95.
I love NHT speakers. They're nice. They're good speakers.
Yeah, they're a good speaker. That's the best thing I could say about them. They're not flashy or anything like that, but
hey, the lights are off most of the time anyway, so you don't have to be flashy.
Well, that's – I mean, my theater is everything's in the walls. I wanted that movie theater effect where you can't see anything, so that's – I really don't care. But when we built the house in 2001, we were here for like 3 days, and I'm like, can we get the TV? And it was I wanted to build a wall. That's why I have a wall at the front. I saw an article in Home Theater Magazine where M. Night Shyamalan, his theater, and I bought the same TV he had. It was a 65-inch Mitsubishi rear projection. In 2001, that was a big deal.
That was probably the new hotness, almost certainly. Those rear projection TVs, I mean, it was very easy to look at that in the showroom and go, wow, that looks amazing. And then you get it home and you go like, is it brighter in the center than it is off to the sides? Yeah. What's going on here?
But I built the wall so that only the screen showed.
Yeah, that's
you cool. didn't see anything else on it. It was only the screen showed, and it was a theater to me in the room that I'm in now. And that's what, you know. And even M. Night was like, "This is all I want." In his screening room, he's like, "65 inches is all you need." And I'm like, "All right, that's what I built." Yeah. But she came downstairs and there was a tape mark on the wall where it was going to go. And we'd been in the house for like 3 days.
Yeah.
She's like, what? I was like, I'm all set. Ready to go.
Don't worry, honey.
But
this is all taken care of down here. This is fine.
Yeah. It's before we built the house. Every house I would go into, I'd look around and go, this would be a good room for a theater.
Well, when we shopped, every house we've ever shopped for, that has been the primary question is where will the TV go? You know, I have asked that question. The first houses, when we moved to Jacksonville, before I got, you know, in that first real system, I was looking in each room and going, where would I put the TV? Where would I put the TV? She was not so interested in that. But since then, you know, since I started working in the industry, that's been the number one thing. Like now, the last time we bought the house we're currently in, we would walk in the houses and she would go, okay, is there a place for the theater room? Which is nice. It's nice to have that sort of support.
Right.
But she is not someone who likes to watch TV. And the selling point for a theater room is I don't have another TV in this house. There are no TVs in any of the rooms of this house. There's not a TV in my bedroom. None of the kids have TVs. We have computers with computer screens that can show things, but we do not have a sit-down place where you watch TV. We have a family room or a, you know, living room where there's couches, no TV.
No, that's crazy. I heard you say that at the beginning of the pandemic, and I'm like, oh boy.
Oh, it's great. It is fantastic because the rest of the house is like completely for socializing and for doing things and playing games and doing whatever you want. Doesn't matter. But the TV room is for watching TV, and that's it. The theater room is for watching TV, watching movies, you know, streaming stuff. We rarely even play games in here. I do have an Xbox One and a PlayStation 3, but we almost never play games in here. My son, my 14, 13, 14, I don't remember. Anyways, he's just started playing Isaac, Binding of Isaac, which is a roguelike game that I'm not very good at. He started getting into it, and now he's better than me. So that sucks. But, you know, he's got 6 hours a day to play it if he can get his homework done in time, and I've got zero. So that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. My son loves the theater for video games. Mm-hmm. He just graduated from New Haven College. And he's back now, and he's living here and taking up theater time, playing his video games. So, but he loves that, and, I mean, playing a first-person shooter game on a 110-inch screen is like, I've heard people say it's not as good because you have to look around, but I think those are people that haven't experienced that.
Mm. So, Clint's theater, I think he had a 110-inch screen, but he sat about 6 feet away from it, maybe 8 feet away from it. It is so, so big. And he would have to take Dramamine before he would play a first-person shooter with me. We used to play Halo, one of the Halos. We used to play Left 4 Dead 2. We used to play a whole bunch of games together. We used to play Rock Band, too, as a matter of fact. And he would have to take Dramamine before he could play games with me. But I've never had that problem. But I always make sure my screens are the size so that I don't have to move my eyes to see the corners. And I don't get motion sickness very easily. I mean, I understand why people want to wear headphones when it comes to gaming because it gives you a more immersive sound and stuff. But I find, especially like in a first-person shooter where you're worried about things in the environment.
Yeah.
If you have a good system that allows you to pinpoint where the sound is coming from, it is immensely helpful. And to me, it's way better than headphones. I think they do because if my head is turned a little bit, for one reason or another, but I'm wearing headphones, it's still going to come from wherever it's supposed to come from in the 3D space.
Right.
Assuming my head's straight forward. But if I'm in the home theater and my head's cocked to the side, it's still coming from where it's supposed to be coming from.
Exactly.
And I can adjust based on that. This is from a man who hasn't played a first-person shooter in about 7 years. So maybe... Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
No. I played years ago. My son plays now. I'll go in and sit down and watch. And it is. It's even more entertaining for you, obviously, because I don't have headphones on. But you sit there and it's like he'll actually say to me, like, if you hear something over there, if I'm sitting on one side of the room, I'll be okay, something's over here in the back right corner.
right.
But, yeah, it is. It's like I said, I think that's more people that haven't experienced that. They're like, oh, you need a smaller screen so you can just focus on that. It's like, no, it's so immersive. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
So let's get to Jurassic Park.
Oh, only 42 minutes into the podcast. Let's go.
Yeah, titled Jurassic Park / Tom Andrew.
Sorry.
I'm going to have to reverse that.
You're going to have to reverse that.
Yeah.
But if you really want to hear anything about Jurassic Park, skip to about the 45-minute mark.
Yeah. No, it's... but I did think it's funny that you brought that up, that, you know, your entrance into the home theater hobby, the bug that bit you, is Jurassic Park. And just waiting for you to jump on tonight, I happened to be going through your stuff, and I read that, and I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm like, I had my own reasons for having you on, was because that was what you were going to talk about on AV Rant the first time I listened. The reason I clicked on your podcast was because it was titled Jurassic Park 4K. I think it was that one.
Right.
I think it was titled that, or DTS.
It would have been, yes, because that was a promo copy they sent me. So whenever somebody sends me a promo copy, that's the title of the podcast.
Okay.
If I do a review or whatever, I title the podcast based on that so that they can find it and that other people, for the exact reason that you're describing. I clicked on it because I saw the product and I wanted to know more about the product.
Right. And that's how because of that instance, that's how I run both of my podcasts. I try to title stuff around things that people would be like, oh, hey, that sounds interesting, and I'll click on it. I don't know what I'm doing. I like this stuff. I figured I'd do a podcast, you know, so I'm like, I'm learning on the fly here. And I learned from my own experiences. And obviously, I tuned into AV Rant expecting to hear a review of Jurassic Park and got like 2 sentences. You really enjoyed it. It's really loud. DTS is crazy. And then I went on and heard the rest of AV Rant.
And then 2 hours later, the podcast was done. Yeah, I like to have thought I'd put more than 2 sentences into it. But yes,
no, but
I do a little bit at the beginning so that exactly what you described. People who are looking for the product, it's the first thing I talk about. I make sure that they hear what they want to hear. If they want to stick around for the rest of the podcast, that's fine. Nothing irritates me more than clicking on the podcast like that or anything and then having to scroll through or to listen to a whole bunch of stuff I'm not there for to get to the thing I'm actually there for. So if I title it that way, I'm looking, you know, I want to make sure they give those people, if they decide to stick around, great. Happy to have you. But if they're like, oh, that's all I wanted to hear and they want to go, well, at least they're not mad at me when they leave. at least they're not irritated.
Yeah. So see, now with that line of thinking, maybe I do have to retitle it to Tom Andrew / Jurassic Park.
I don't know. It doesn't
No. All right. So my typical thing when I talk about a movie is I'll just go through the movie. This podcast is just me. And this is what I do. I love talking about movies. The idea was, like, you guys do your thing, and you guys get people's theaters to sound great.
Yep.
And then...
hopefully.
Yep.
They listen to us.
Well, that's the thing. It's, you know, to go off on another tangent, just like Lee, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
I think I have the best system, because it is my best system.
It is.
And the one I had 5 years ago was my best system. You know,
so you
and
got
it's
the
like,
new one.
Then right. And then when you, it, and that's what makes it so much fun is when a new disc comes out with upgraded whatever, you're excited for that. When you get a new projector, when you get new speakers, you get new receiver, you hear and see new things. I've upgraded receivers and my wife thought the picture looked better. And it's like nothing changed.
Yeah.
Or you get a new projector and it sounds better. It's all mental, you know? But this is what this movie here was obviously a huge movie cinematically.
Well, you know, it was for the industry. It was huge. I mean,
yes.
Theaters could not get Jurassic Park unless they qualified for a certain level of sound and a certain ability to do surround sound. There were lots of theaters that had to upgrade one theater within their, you know, within their building in order for it to be able to be eligible to play Jurassic Park. I mean, it was nuts. I remember having to drive 30 minutes to get to find a theater to watch that movie when it came out.
Yeah. That he pulled George Lucas. Did the same thing with Star Wars.
Yeah.
To get the 70 millimeter cut, you had to have the whatever Dolby surround system that was literally just invented, wasn't it?
I mean, Jurassic Park was a game changer for a lot of people who watched it. There was so much, for me at least, the nostalgia factor for that movie is so huge. It's very hard to watch it with a critical eye. You know, I'm sitting there watching it with my kids to prepare for this podcast, and I'm like, wow, this is just, it's interesting to have so much space between, you know, that when it came out and the stuff that it changed in my life, and then to now knowing I'm going to be discussing on the podcast and trying to look at it critically, how different that feels. Cause it was a game changer for, I mean, the special effects, no one had seen anything like that before.
No
one had seen it. The sound, nobody had heard anything like that before. Almost, I mean, I never. And the just the sheer bass and volume that came out of Jurassic Park was unprecedented in my experience. I walked out of that theater going, that was nuts. I've never seen anything like that. It was a humongous hit.
So, yeah, let me ask you this. So I did this, and I got to imagine a lot of home theater enthusiasts did this. You get a new subwoofer. What do you do? How do you test it? Did you go and get a glass of water and put it down on the coffee table in front of you and play that scene and try and get the water to shake?
So in order to get that water to shake exactly the way that they did that, if you go and you watch like the, or I don't know if I read an article or watched one of the commentaries or whatever, they actually had to pull the car down, straight down, so that, because if you hit it from the side, the waves will go side to side, but they wanted to go straight down from the center and then out. And to do that, they had to pull the whole car down to do that, which is just insane. But yes, there's, I guarantee you could put a glass of water on top of a subwoofer and get a similar effect, but the bass in that movie is just insane. It's so much fun.
It's like a benchmark. Mm. It's like when you get a new sub or you want to show off a scene, it's that scene right there with the, because it's that it's that low grumble. It's not even that punch you in the chest type bass. It's like if you're watching it on a regular TV at a friend's house and it's on like HBO, you don't even hear. You just see the glass moving.
Right.
Right. But if you're in a good theater like Lee Overstreet now has, he's probably noticing stuff that you didn't know. And he's like, oh, I thought I heard bass before. But that's, you know, it's different. It's low.
His room is not enclosed, so he's actually still not hearing everything or experiencing everything that he could be. There's still more that could be done in that theater. I mean, when you're in a fully enclosed, fully pressurized room, listening to close to reference volume on that, you can feel the air change as the T-Rex starts to move that water. You can feel the pressure on your ears. You can feel the pressure on your face. You can feel it a little bit in your chest as that happens. And that's, it's such a visceral thing, but it's not like, oh my God, you know, it's so dramatic. But if you pay attention to it, that's also part of that experience. And that's a thing that just makes, if you think about having to try to do that in the volume of air that is in a normal theater, and why Spielberg demanding that they be able to pressurize that space was such a big deal. I mean, a lot of theaters were just like, we can't afford it. We can't afford to do all the stuff that he needs us to do. But at home, you're like, oh yeah, man, I got like a grand in a small room. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah. So what would you like to start off with?
It's your podcast, man.
You were watching it through a critical eye.
Yeah.
So what do you see the differences between, like, is there something that bothers you now compared to back then? Is it bothering you or do you still have those rose colored glasses?
Oh yeah. So the scene when they're all in the boardroom and they're having the sea bass and they're discussing, you know, the park has always been one that's bothered me, you know, from even back then. My friends and I would talk about how everybody was trying to be more dramatic than the next, you know, for no reason. It's just, you know, Malcolm was always that way, but the other one, it was like, you have, you know, this illusion of control or blah blah blah. They keep talking. I'm like, nobody's excited that they just saw a dinosaur. Really? Nobody's right. Gonna be like, oh my God, you made dinosaurs. You are the man. Cause I certainly would have been my reaction. So yes, it does to me. The big theme of the movie is that money controls everything and ruins everything, which is essentially, I mean, right. If you look at every decision that every person makes in this movie up until the very, very end, it's all money related. Why did the doctors go to Jurassic Park? Because he offered them money. Why is the the lawyer there? Because of money. Why is Malcolm there? Money. Why is, you know, why is Nedry doing what Nedry's doing? Money. Or not enough money. You know, and it's all money related. So, you know, once they get past that, then they switch over to, you know, they're trying to save people, which is great. It's great that they finally have that decision. But if you listen to like the arguments everybody's making, none of it makes any sense whatsoever. I mean, it really doesn't, and it could have. So I enjoy the movie. I love the movie. It'll always hold a special place in my heart. But my son sitting there, my 14-year-old son was watching with me, and he's like, oh, yeah, Malcolm's right. I'm like, Malcolm's an idiot. Shut up. He's an idiot. What, you know, life will find a way. What does that even mean? And it's not true. Science found a way. Science just made a mistake, and that's what found the way. No, life will find a way. And explain to me the lysine contingency, how they were going to implement that. Because we could implement this lysine contingency. And Hammond's like, oh, we're not even going to talk about that. I'm like, you couldn't implement it if you tried. What are you talking about? It's not giving them food. You're kind of doing that already, I guess.
I mean, right. What are we talking about? Yeah. I thought the lysine contingency was they just didn't give it to them anymore.
Right. Yeah. So they no longer get the vitamins. Are you planning on coming back in here dropping vitamin D on them or whatever it is that they need? Because I'm pretty sure that's not happening. But there's a lot of, like, I almost want to mute the
dialogue.
I also want to put it into a different language and then not put on subtitles and just and just enjoy the action and enjoy the interactions, because it's all so well shot, it's so well filmed, it's so well acted for the most part. I don't think any of these actors did, you know, in any way, nobody Keanu Reeves did. You know, where like here's Dangerous Liaisons, here's everybody's, you know, Glenn Close and John Malkovich and all these other people, and then in walks Keanu Reeves. Whoa. I'm like, what are you doing here? Get this kid out. He's not, nobody did that. Everybody did a fantastic job, and Steven Spielberg said, say this line and say it this way, and they killed it. But the writing's kind of garbage. I'm going to be honest. to me, the writing is kind of garbage. I'm sorry. All you people out there, just throw me on the pyre. And
I get into these things because of like the home theater environment. Right. And I don't mind that. I don't mind that there's a lot of movies I watch that the writing is garbage.
Oh my God.
But it's a home. Yeah. It's like a roller coaster ride, you know? And like Martin Scorsese said, oh, it's an amusement park. Yeah, that's okay. I love that. It's fun.
There's nothing wrong with that. Well, we watched Tomb Raider this weekend with my family. My
the latest one or the older one?
The latest one. My 16-year-old son, for reasons I don't understand, he likes that movie. So every time he gets to pick the movie, we watch Tomb Raider. Almost every time. And my wife really likes it. I'm like, are you kidding? Just look at the writing. I mean, there's a lot of things to like in that movie. I think she's fantastic, but so much of it makes zero sense whatsoever.
Well, yeah.
But it's a fun movie, and there's nothing wrong with that. I am a big believer in just letting go and enjoying yourself and trying not to pay too much attention. Like, are you one of those guys who, as you watch a movie, you're like, oh, I already know who the killer is?
I like to figure it out. Hmm. I like to try. Yes. Right. I guess I would be.
I sit there and I actively kind of shut off that part of my brain and just sort of like try to let that part go. I am more often surprised in these movies than I have any right to be. I mean, it's very easy to figure out who's got, you know, based on plot and everything else, you know, with the movie What Lies Beneath. Is that what it is? The one with Harrison Ford and what's her name? Michelle Pfeiffer. Is that what it's called? I don't know. There was only three. There was like literally three characters in the movie. I'm like, well, okay, this one's this one's dead. This one's Harrison Ford. And there's one more. I wonder who the killer is going to be. But you know, I like to shut that part of my brain off. So when I watch Jurassic Park, I do exactly what you're talking about. I just kind of sit back and let this stuff all roll over me. Try not to roll my eyes too much when they're all sitting around the table trying to
science each other.
Well,
or
scout. I'll be dramatic about it. It's like,
right?
Yeah, I don't know.
So actually, I wrote down that one scene. It's that scene actually takes place at 34 minutes and 30 seconds. And what I liked about it was the fact that, I mean, the projector noises, the way it's shot, the light coming off of each of the slide projectors.
Right.
And the way that Spielberg shot that, and you can the dark black background. And then you can see the light off of each projector. But then your theater around your room is like, you can hear the projectors going off in different speakers around your room.
Right.
And I think that adds to the dramatization that you're talking about, where they're all trying to, and if you pay attention, like the projector's light will go off behind like Malcolm's head when he gets an idea. It's like, pling.
So, and that's something, and Spielberg, amongst many other directors too, you know, that are fantastic directors, it covers up, you know, so many sins. You know, good directing, good filming, good, composition, and good music. I mean, come on, John Williams, it's insane. That stuff it's such a big part of the movie that not one part of a movie can, it's very hard for one part of a movie to fail so incredibly hard that all the rest of that is invalidated because of it. Usually the rest of the movie, if it's shot really well and there's some little issues here and there, you don't notice them because you're so busy being wrapped up in what's happening and what people are saying and the music and the emotion and everything else. And I agree with you completely. You know, that scene, if it weren't for the fact that me and my friends in college made so much fun of it over and over again, I would probably not think twice about it. It would just be another, overly dramatic scene. But we used to make fun of it constantly. And we would sometimes go around while we're sitting there eating at home, just like, try to do that about the refrigerator.
Try to do that scene. Yeah.
Like, we don't know what's in there. It could be anything. It's probably pizza, since that's what we had last night, but it could have spoiled. You don't have any control.
That's funny. You're overacting a scene.
From Jurassic Park, that's right. We're overacting, leftovers in the refrigerator. So. As one does when you're a drama student in college. That was fairly normal behavior for us.
Exactly. So, the scene in the right before that, in the Velociraptor pit.
Yes.
When you hear the Velociraptor and they dropped the, what was it, a cow? I think they lowered in.
Yes.
And then it came up all torn.
Don't you think that they would come up with a better way that doesn't involve that harness getting shredded
how
many harnesses do they have? They just have they're on an island in the middle of nowhere, and they're like, go to Amazon, buy all the cow harnesses you can find.
Right.
Because we're going through them like three times a day. It's insane.
Well, I'm an animal lover. Not a member of PETA, but I'm an animal lover. But why don't they just drop the cow in? They're being so careful and delicate with it to be mauled.
I mean, have you ever lowered food slowly towards a hungry animal? You know what they do? They jump. They're right. I'm not waiting for you to get it all the way down here so that we can walk around it a couple of times. That pen made no sense anyways. I mean, I couldn't quite... I think I knew what they were going for, which was there's a larger enclosure, but this one little pen is where they were feeding them. But the way it was filmed, I couldn't really tell. It just looked like there were velociraptors in a 12 by 15 foot space, three of them in there. I'm like, really? Because it seems like there's not enough room for three massive dinosaurs. But yes, it's not like the cow is going to be any less tasty if all four of its legs are broken.
If it bounces.
But, yeah, it bounces once or twice. The velociraptors are like, you know, I mean, because you saw what they do later, right? So this thing's slowly coming down. The velociraptor jumps up, grabs onto the cow, climbs up its harness, right, onto the thing, and then jumps over the fence, and everybody dies. I mean, there was a couple of very questionable design choices as far as how this park operated, and it wasn't just about the fact that Nedry could turn everything off with one button switch. The guy at the beginning who's raising the gate, what exactly is he doing, and why can it not, why isn't there like a remote control for that?
Right.
Why does he have to stand there and go,
put his
hands on top, and the gate slowly opens. Like, how much does that guy get paid? Because it's clearly not enough. Or too much. I mean, it's literally, he's like, gatekeeper, open the gate. I'm like, yeah, really? That's his job? That's all he does? What is he, union? Is there a union for gatekeepers? I'm fairly confused as to how all of this works. I am ruining this movie for somebody right now. They are upset with me for making fun of this thing.
What? How old is this movie now? 96.
I don't want to think about it.
That's the year I got married. So 27 years. 27 years. 27.
That's an old movie.
Yeah.
And it actually ages really well. Even the special effects, which are still just, I mean, you can kind of see the CGI going on, but there is just so much good going on there. Just so well done. Cause I mean, you look back at like, what, Mortal Kombat, right? Look at the CGI in that garbage, that dung heap of a movie, which is another movie I love and loved when it came out. I was one of the ones cheering in the movie theater when, you know, at the very, whatever, Goro came out. I was like, oh my God, it's Goro. But, this movie just, there is so much to love as far as, you know, how well this thing, and it's just another, I want to say tribute, but this is just another thing that shows how good Steven Spielberg really is. He is just he's so good that 27 years later, you're going to be able to get a podcast out that people are going to want to listen to about a movie.
Right.
That has a bunch of CGI dinosaurs in it. How has that aged this well? It's amazing.
That's the part we kind of talked about earlier, that it revolutionized the movie industry. And I was watching some of the extras, and they originally were going to start doing stop motion. That's
right.
Their original plan was to do stop motion. And then they came up with this CGI thing, and the stop motion guy was like, I'm on. I have a job.
Yeah.
But what they...
I think you mean
it mirrored extinct. The movie. Huh?
I think you mean extinct.
Yes, exactly.
Which is exactly the line in the movie.
Exactly. So, but what they ended up doing is they took the stop motion guy. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a legend in the industry for his stop motion. And what, did you say his name?
No, I did not. So I didn't know what it is.
But what they ended up doing was using him and implementing that with CGI, because what they found was if they could take a picture of it and with his knowledge of movement and the way it should be, that's how they did it. They got the images into the CGI and they used both.
Yeah.
Which, and to this day, you can't question there's no doubt about their CGI. It's not like going back, like you said, any other movie from that time.
And there's quite a few practical effects in that too. You know, the T-Rex's head in a lot of those scenes is real.
Yeah.
It's a real thing that they are navigating around.
Yeah, Stan Winston was huge.
Yeah, and the ability to know when to use practical versus when you could get away with CGI, or, you know, maybe it
mixing.
Was, you know, mixing the two. I mean, it's something that directors are still figuring out. You know, how, I mean, George, you know, you call me George Lucas, but, you know, the prequels, right? All CGI, and probably as cutting edge as CGI can ever get. And there's a real reason why those movies have very little impact as far as emotionally or anything else. It's not just the writing. It's about you know, knowing the difference between when you use the CGI, you know, when you have a practical effect there, even if it's just, what's his name, the Gollum guy who plays like the Planet of the Apes ape and King Kong and everything else, whose name escapes me right now. Even if it's just a guy with a ball suit on who lets you know what's going on, it's enough sometimes for the actors. But they, you know, this movie is a masterclass on how to do just about everything but writing right. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, and that's the thing. I think I can cover that up because that's what he did. Yeah. And like when we, let's go through this movie and like opening scene, like we said, and we said before we started recording, you were like, you've got to turn that Velociraptor too loud.
It's too loud.
But that's what they're going for, is they're going for that wow effect, because even the Universal Pictures logo before the movie starts, That had a boom in it that isn't normal, right?
Yeah.
And he is, I'm not saying he's covering up his writing. It's not like he, you know, Spielberg sits down and goes, well, this is crappy writing, so let's run. You know, I'm going to have some good special effects.
I shouldn't have farted this one out this way. Well, let's go with it. Print it.
Call Stan Winston, because we don't have good writing here. But you know what I mean? Like, so you're so engrossed in the movie at that point. And like you said, like you had to turn it down. You were saying on AV Rant the other day, you're like, it's too loud. I had to dial it back.
Yeah.
I power through. I stay at zero and just enjoy it. But the noise, the bass in that, in the discrete channels and especially in the new, well, I was going to say Atmos, but it's the DTS:X.
DTS:X, yeah.
That's so powerful. That it does. It covers up all that stuff. It's not until the second, third, fourth, 27 years later viewings that you go, seriously, Gatekeeper? The line through the whole movie is spared no expense, but you got a poor guy that's got to open a big steel door. Well, but you were so engrossed.
Yeah, like 35. Yeah, exactly. And it almost doesn't matter what the characters say. To a certain extent,
right.
It almost doesn't matter what the characters say, because it's about their emotion when they're saying it. And there's one thing that I want to say about the writing, because I've kind of been bagging on the writing, and who am I, that's nobody really, to be bagging on Spielberg's writing. One of the things that every director, every writer needs to learn from this movie, if they learn nothing else, is that every character. That makes it to the end of the movie, and some of them that don't, all of them have an arc, and they have growth of some sort. All of them do. So, you know, it's not just your main character who gets this arc, and everybody else is just, you know, nothing irritates me more than you have your action hero, and he shows up at somebody's house who's their longtime friend, and he gets his big gun or the information he needs, and then the friend immediately dies. I'm like, why does that character not get their arc? Why did they not have any part in this? But here, you know, Malcolm has a growth of sorts. I mean, he doesn't grow as much as anybody else, but he does grow. So Hammond clearly, you know, goes from this sort of happy-go-lucky, kind of salesman thing, to realizing that maybe he had made some mistakes and that, and that it wasn't in the end worth it to go through what he did. The doctors both, of course, do. Of course, what is his name? Sam Neill's character. It's fallen out of my head. Grant. Dr. Grant. Yep.
Dr. Grant,
of course, has the most growth. But even Sadler, you can see her character has, you know, kind of goes from sort of this background, you know, just she's just the botanist. I mean, she's the – and please explain to me how the extinct plants came back. Because they never explained how the blood from the dinosaur, right?
Yeah. Where
they also have some plant DNA in there, and they replicated that, because they never explained that, but whatever. but she went from being this kind of background to being this really kick-butt character who, you know, was able to fend for herself and everything else. So there was a lot of growth of all these different characters throughout this, and that's what's important. That's why we still love this movie, because we can watch this movie and these characters go from point A through a crucible to point B. You know, Dr. Grant doesn't like kids, you know, for whatever reason, technology, that line never really went anywhere. And then at the end, he's, you know, napping with the kids. She goes from, you know, wallflower, just part of this, to at the very end, she is, you know, leading the charge. She is saving the kids. She's
Lara Croft.
Yeah, basic Lara Croft before Lara Croft. Hey, is there another scene in the movie when she falls on the ground at the very end and looks up at the velociraptors? I'm like, dang, Laura Dern is hot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, she has to run the same. Yep. Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know what? Running from dinosaurs looks good on you. I'm like, whoever gave you your Brazilian blowout that day nailed it. Your hair looks fantastic.
Yes.
But each of these characters has an arc, and they grow and they change, and we care about them, and that's why this movie is so good. I mean, yes, the CGI, yes, the sound, yes, all the other stuff, but it doesn't even matter that they're not, what they're saying is sometimes nonsensical or out of context or what are you talking about? It matters that they care and that they grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's clearly outlined. Yeah. And we have dinosaurs.
Yeah. So,
that was the next thing that I was going to get to, is that what Spielberg did here. I don't know if I heard this or I think he learned from Jaws. Like, that was an accident in Jaws that they didn't show the shark until the end.
Right.
That was an accident because they couldn't get the shark to work. So he ended up developing that idea of less is more.
Right.
Well, then he utilized that with Jurassic Park, in that every advertisement for the movie, you never saw a dinosaur. You never saw anything. And then in the movie, we have that opening scene. The only thing we see is the velociraptor's eye. And then we fade out from there. So it's not until, 1950 of the first, at the beginning of the movie, that's when you first see the dinosaurs, and the way they shot that, and the, what were those, brachiosauruses?
Brachiosaurus, yeah.
And it was, you, as a viewer, were just like Dr. Grant and Sadler and Malcolm.
Right.
And like seeing Malcolm's face, and again, watching some of the extras in the behind the scenes and them talking about acting that out, they had no idea what they were going to see. They were there. But they didn't know what they were developing.
Can you imagine,
right?
If it was claymation, though? Like they
were. Exactly. But they said, like, Jeff Goldblum was saying, like, you know, Spielberg is like right off camera in his ear going, you see, you're all excited. You're doing, and he's like, oh my God, he did it. And he's acting the scene out. And we were as captivated by that. It's like all the commercials, every ad leading up to it, you couldn't wait for that moment. And then when it came, it was all marketing, because at the end of it, even now, 27 years later, that isn't the most spectacular viewing of a dinosaur in the movie.
Right.
But I still remember being blown away by that scene and the music. Oh my God. It just fills the room when they do that.
If you ever get the chance to go to many symphonies do this, they'll have a John Williams retrospective. And it'll just be, you know, all these movies from these scores from different movies, these famous songs from different movies. I would highly recommend you not do it. Don't
not
go there.
Do it.
No. It'll disillusion you on John Williams so hard, because I went to one and I love John Williams. I love his music, but you quickly realize the man's got a formula and he's sticking to it. And those songs all sound like Jurassic Park will start up and you're like, it's Jurassic Park. And then something else will start up. You're like, it's E.T. Something else will start up. Like, maybe one of the Indiana Jones. I'm not really sure. It could be Indiana. It's definitely not Star Wars. I can tell you it's not Star Wars, but, and then it's, but
they blend together.
Music is so emotionally resonant. That is the part that is so important with John Williams, is that when you hear his music, he scores it so that the rising emotion within, it's the same thing they do with trailers, right? They do that thing so that it rises up and that gets like that chill up your spine. I mean, he's like, he's like a master of that, where you're listening and this is something exciting is going to happen because here comes John Williams to tell you something exciting is going to happen. And now you're excited about it. And then it happens and Spielberg delivers and it's awesome. And then that's why it works. I've often said this. There's a movie with Julia Roberts and can't remember who. I think it was called something like Treason or Ransom. It was with Julia Roberts, and the guy was constantly, he was like brainwashed by the CIA or something like that as a killer.
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. And it was,
I remember. I was actually, my wife and I saw that in Newport. We were on vacation, and the movie was taking place in, I think part of it took place in Newport. And it was, so we were like, hey.
there's a part there at the end. I think he's lying, dying or something like that. And there's no music. And I was just like, it had no, I think the idea by the director was, we want the scene to stand on its own emotionally, you know, blah, blah, blah. It like killed the scene. John Williams would have never let that stand. He'd be like, no.
Yeah.
Let me, I got this. Let me, don't worry. Everybody will be crying by the end of this thing. Let me do it. And that's what he brings to the table. Every time he delivers, every time. There's a reason why people go with him. There's a reason why, you know, so many of these big blockbuster type movies like this have his scores on them. It's because the man can make you feel whatever he wants to make you feel with his music, and it's amazing.
Yeah. My buddy saw Star Wars with a live orchestra playing the score he saw that down in where he lives down in Texas.
That would be awesome.
And he said, if you get that opportunity, see that. He's like, it's just unreal. And to see the entire orchestra sitting there down below the screen and just...
That's like old school movies, man. That's like the before the talkies.
Right. let me see. Oh, there was a scene that I was going to jump ahead to a scene here. There was a scene that actually I wonder if you've ever even noticed it. I just noticed it for the first time. The picture, the 4K, I thought was real. I know you don't have a 4K yet, right?
I have, I just have a 1080p projector.
1080p. There's construction workers in the background and you can hear them. And it's like for the listeners, it's at 38 minutes and 20 seconds. They're coming down out of the lobby they're meeting the kids.
Right.
Just coming into the lobby area.
Yeah.
And you can actually, I've never seen it before, but there's just like obscure construction workers still working on the lobby. You can hear them chitter chattering too in your speaker. I was like, what the? And you see the guys in the background. I was like, I've never seen that before. I thought it was a riot.
You see, little touches like that make a big difference in the movie. Because even if you don't consciously hear them or see them, there's a certain expectation when you're looking at a scene or you're in the moment of a movie that there should be X amount of background noise, X amount of, echoiness of what's being said. And if it's not done right, it can take you out of, the immersion can be completely broken. So that's, that's probably why I haven't noticed it, because it was just part of the background and it's exactly what the background should have been. So I could then, without paying attention to that, I can focus on the kids, which is the part I was really interested in.
Right.
Yeah.
But upon many viewings, you start, I start looking around and you're looking at different things. And I saw this guy. I go, who's that guy? Oh, those are construction workers. And then you start listening for what you, I hear them, the chitter chatter going on.
Yeah. The DTSX, mix on this thing is kind of nuts. It's very well done. If you're looking for overhead speakers and you're into that sort of thing, this is certainly a way to make sure you're getting your money's worth out of them. You hear a lot of overhead information, and DTS doesn't mind goosing them a little bit to make them a little bit more noticeable. So I am perfectly, this is a very, very good disc to recommend to people who are looking for, first of all, it's a great movie. I know I've been bagging on it on and off, but it is a great movie. It's a classic. It's my kids are probably going to show their kids this movie in, you know, VR or whatever that comes out on when they're old enough. This movie is going to be one that, you know, while it might not be a Citizen Kane of its time, thankfully, because Citizen Kane was boring. Sorry. I took a film class. They made us watch it. I fell asleep four times. So I tried to stay awake for that thing. But it is the kind of classic, and its influence not only on the industry, but on movies as a whole going forward. I mean, it is the yardstick that we can use to measure so many different movies. And it's amazing that 27 years later, we're talking about it, and I can name 5 movies that came out in the last year that aren't as good as Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
That had, you know, 10 times the budget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, and like you said, you can bash on, you know, over-dramatization and writing, but
I can nitpick any movie. My favorite movie of all time. Oh, not my favorite movie of all time, but one of my favorite, the movie I've seen most in the theaters was The Crow. And I've seen it so many times. I can tell you where the editing was changed because of his death. So that they could have a coherent movie. And I'm like, you could tell because sometimes they're talking about it's Devil's Night and sometimes it's the night before Devil's Night and they mixed it all up. I had it all straight. I've seen it so many times. I had it all straight in my head. I couldn't do it right now, but I've seen it so many times. I love that movie. It has some problems, but, and this is the same thing that there's no reason that, there's very few perfect, as far as I'm concerned, perfect things out there. And the fact that I can sit here and nitpick to death this movie just tells you how many, many times I have seen it.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's the thing. You watch it that many times, you're going to find flaws because you're going to get not bored, but you know, you're looking for new things. Let's talk about the T-Rex scene.
Okay.
The most famous probably scene and the one people jump to, it's at 1 hour and literally 1 hour and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
T-Rex, talk about overheads. You can hear the rain coming in, you know, because they're inside the cars. They're breathing and, you know, the little wiping on the windshield.
Right.
But, yeah, you can really hear that. The ambient sound in this scene, that's one of those things where now we've upgraded our systems to this, you know, Atmos/DTSX. That we didn't have that. It's like when you watch this back in, what was it, 93, 94, where you're using a VHS tape, so you're doing ProLogic, and it still sounded phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's just clearer, and they're able to just give you more.
They are. You know, we're not very good at hearing anything that's not, we're not, you know, pointing our heads towards. That's the way our ears are shaped and stuff like that. So it's a lot, you know, behind us, above us, it's a lot more forgiving as far as what we can locate exactly or identify exactly. But it certainly does help to have those speakers overhead, you know, right above you to give you that overhead sensation. It does put you right there in that scene. That's for sure. I mean, the T-Rex scene is one, it's very... It's almost hard to pay attention to the ambient sounds when you're so wrapped up in the fact that here comes the T-Rex and you're like, oh, you know, the bass, you're listening to the bass, you're feeling the bass and all this stuff, but there's so much more going on there that you can experience. And multiple viewings is where you're absolutely right. You end up saying, okay, wow, I never really noticed that, you know, there's construction workers here. Oh, wow. Listen to the overhead rain and stuff. You know, I was watching that scene with my 14-year-old son and my 10-year-old son. And my 10-year-old son was freaking out.
Really?
He was not happy about the T-Rex coming on board and attacking everybody.
There's some good jump scenes there, though. When the goat leg lands on the roof.
Yeah. He did not like that. But...
But the bass in that too. It's a, I mean, it,
you everything.
You'd be Stevie Wonder and you're going to jump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big
I jump
boom
still,
there.
I think. Yeah. I mean, half the time I will because I'm not exactly, I don't watch it on the regular. So, you know, boom, there I am jumping again. And that's just good. it's just good timing on the editor's part or Steven's part or whatever. I'm Steven, like he came.
Yeah, your buddy. Oh, you're Steven. George. You're George.
I'm George.
So you guys are best buddies.
We're hanging out all the time. I wonder if George, if Steven still talks to George after he ruined Crusade, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I think they do. I'm pretty sure I saw something within the last few years where they were hanging out on a set of something like a Star Wars or something together. And I saw them.
Man, like, it must
chit-chat.
Be nice to have friends like that.
Oh. It's yeah, I know. It's crazy.
But yeah, so that's, you know, scenes like that, it's all of it. And having good speakers, even, you know, and I am the last person that will tell you that you need to go out and buy overhead speakers. I feel like you get, you know, 80% of the performance and the experience, if not more, by just having surrounds and mm-hmm. well-placed surrounds and stuff like that. You will still feel like there's rain coming down overhead. Before yep. I ever had overhead speakers, I would watch a movie and then not realize, and then I'd have to stop it to see if it was thundering inside or outside. So, yeah. You know, that's still an experience that we had before we had overhead speakers. This just is like the little dollop of cream on top of the sundae that is your home theater.
It really is that, what's that rule of thumb? Like it costs you this much to get this far to get to like 95%, but then it costs you like three times as much to get another 2% better.
Yes.
And you know what I mean? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. And home theater is like that. Going from having just a TV to having two real speakers on either side is a massive difference.
Yep.
Going from that to having surround is a massive difference. Going from that to having, you know, subwoofers is a massive difference. And then, you know, everything else. And then from that to having subwoofers in a well-treated room with the subwoofers placed correctly is a massive, pretty massive difference there too. You can experience some pretty intense upgrade that way. But overheads and, you know, surround backs to us in my experience and I like to bag on surround backs, so I should probably not do that. But you know, these other things help, you know?
Right?
And in specific situations, they make a pretty significant change. But most of the time, you know, going from stereo to surround is huge. Adding a subwoofer or two is huge. You know, treating your room and getting your room set up correctly so that you're not getting weird interactions between, you know, how the bass is being handled in your room, so that when you're sitting here, in your seat, you know, some bass sounds are just non-existent and others are way too loud. So you have to turn the whole thing down because of it. Suddenly you can turn the whole thing up because it's all even. That can make a huge difference there too. But you know, overheads are just nice, I guess. I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I like them for the same reason I like the rears. And I agree with you. They're not needed.
Yeah.
You don't need them. But I like the peace of mind knowing it's the mental game that I know I have what the best I can have.
Right.
That's what that is. And I know they're working. You're right. If you went in a room and you blindfolded and I said, I played the track and I turned the overheads off, most people probably couldn't tell the difference because the system could handle that.
Right.
But it's nice to have them and it makes it more fun.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, my only concern is, like I said, it's about an hour ago, I suppose, is that I want people to get the most bang for their buck. I don't want people to have buyer's remorse, you know, and I want to save them as much money as possible. So when somebody comes to me and says, I want to make a big upgrade on my theater, should I get Atmos speakers? I say no.
Right.
Because most of the time, I don't think that's the experience they're going to get, especially when there's so many other things you can do. Now, there are people who are like, I have done all the things and
right.
I still want an upgrade. Should I get Atmos speakers? Sure. Knock yourself out, man.
At that point.
Yeah. It's good. And like I have them. I experience them. You know, they're as optimally placed as they can be in my home theater. And I'm pleased that they exist.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. That's where I'll stop right there. I'm pleased that they are not falling off the ceiling.
Well, so, there you go. There are yours go. Actually in the ceiling or are yours mounted?
I have
on
it? The Prime Elevation speakers. So
oh, okay.
They are wedge shaped.
Yep.
There's two at the front of the room on the front wall and two on the ceiling either side of my couch. Is that correct? Am I lying? Yes, I am not lying. That is correct.
As you look around the room.
Well, I have to look at them sometimes. I can't remember. That there was one on the one side that I thought about putting on the wall, but then I decided to put it on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Right next to the wall because I like the angle better that way.
Yeah. So,
you're looking
that
at
guy,
my surround but... backs right there. Those are my surround backs.
Yep. What? You have surround backs?
I do. They are totally useless, but they exist. I own them.
There so. You go. Hey, you heard it. He has surround backs next time.
I did.
He...
For many years, and I don't want to say years, but for a long time in this theater, I did not have surround backs, but I did have wires hanging out of my wall back there because I wired for them just in case. And they were just kind of hanging out of the wall back there. So I built a shelf and I put it back there and I had two bookshelf speakers. So I put those on there and I went, and now I have more speakers in my house. And that's all I can say about those.
I have a topic I'd love to talk to Rob about because I think he's like me. If you if they can come out with the technology, he wants it.
Right.
And even in his little room, it's like more speakers, the better, right?
Yes.
I think this is the next one we're going to have to come out with for speakers is floor.
Well, we've already had floor speakers though,
but I mean, not incorporated into theater though, like. Like an Atmos, like a lower another level. We need three levels of speakers. We need ear level, overhead, and floor level.
I think there's enough distance between the speakers that we currently have and the floor to have any sort of differentiation between them. I see what you're saying, and I've seen people who have made theaters like this where they have put speakers, like they have every speaker in there, it's like a bedroom, every speaker is a cube and they'll have them just
cube,
everywhere,
right.
And they wire them up all weird with different receivers in order to like matrix sounds out and blah blah blah, which is fine, whatever, I don't care. I don't see where you can logically put it. Where you could do it is using it for something like a wide speaker.
Yeah.
And those could be on the floor rather than on a stand. But if you were going to have a wide, why not just put it on a stand?
Well, because there was a scene recently. It could have been a Star Wars movie. It could have been something. But we always have, obviously, in the opening of any Star Wars movie, you have the you have a Star Destroyer or something flying over your head.
Yep.
Right? And we have that. There was a scene recently there where something flew under you. Hmm. And you have nowhere to go with that. You can't, you know, all they do is they'll put some bass in it and maybe make the floor rumble a little bit. But imagine if they had, even if you just had two lower speakers middle of the room and it just gave you that a little bit of an effect of hearing something down there that they could work with in an object-based, you know, codec.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there's no reason why they with object-based, they can't just put them everywhere.
Right.
You know. And then use whatever speakers you have. I mean, when they first started talking about this, this is, you know, kind of, I thought they were going to do the RSC Yamaha type thing where you'd have a microphone that can measure in three-dimensional space. Yep. So you put the little, it has like a Nerf boomerang, three-pronged boomerang thing,
yep,
where you put the microphone on all three of the outer points, and I think in the center as well. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've used one. And they use that to triangulate where all your speakers are, you know, to give you, you know, that sort of measurement about reflected sound. I thought that's what they were going to, I still think that's what we will eventually end up with Atmos and DTS:X and receivers. Someday they will implement into your receiver a way for the microphone to not ask you which speakers you have.
Oh.
It will just measure
the capability. You
know, it will measure the sound in your room as it goes from each speaker to each speaker, and it will be able to triangulate its position based on where you've put the microphone so that it will say, okay, so there's, you've got, these are the speakers you have, correct? They're in about in this location, correct? And you'll say yes or no, and then that'll be it. And then we could have as many speakers as you want, because they can just keep measuring until they run out of speakers. And then you could put them on the floor, and then you could put them underneath your chair if you wanted to. You could do all
bass shakers.
It's fine. Well, I mean, the kind of, you know, floor level speaker you're talking about would actually work best underneath your couch, but then it would sound terrible, but it would work best because you can scroll, you can use phase and everything else. If you've ever heard a true floor standing electrostatic speaker that's properly set up and you have your head exactly in the right place between the two speakers so you get that imaging, you do absolutely not need speakers behind you, underneath you, above you, or in front of you.
I've told that story.
In order to hear sound be moved around in a three-dimensional, 360 degrees around your body way, you can absolutely do it with with just two
speakers. You can't move your head.
You cannot move your head, and you cannot share the experience with anybody that's not sitting on your lap directly in front of you.
Yes. Yeah. It's, but, yeah. I've told that story. I've experienced it. I was at a demo, and I didn't know it was electric static speakers until you just said that. I just knew that it was a demo where they set the room up with like a 5.1 or 5.1 system.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like. And they go, this is what you're listening to. And it was this, you know, speaker. It was a house, but it was a, they sold audio.
Right.
Video
right.
gear, right?
Right.
And they take you in this room and then they turn the lights on that are behind the screen. Behind, it was like, and that's all you saw. And it was just, this is the only thing running was these two speakers right here. And it's probably the best sound I've ever heard for a movie, you know, and it was exactly like you said, completely enveloped, rivals any Atmos system that I've heard or anything like that. And you were, but you can't move. As soon as you move, you're outside of that midsection where you have to stand where everything meets perfectly or sit.
Yeah. I was sitting there and I literally would just like push my head about 3 inches to one side or 3 inches to the other. And then the effect would be lost. I mean, it's almost a head in the vice type of thing. It's really, it's nuts, but it's an insane sound. So, you know, you can get that 360, and you know that too could be, I mean, we're getting so off topic at this point, that too could be a more the future of audio, in that, you know, this idea of beaming sounds directly to you, you know, aiming them, being able to aim that directly at you so that you get that experience even if you move around the room. Because I always think of Minority Report, you know, and as he's walking in front of the advertisements, suddenly the sound cuts in, and then it cuts back out, and it changes just for him. And as he looks at it, it will start, he will be able to hear it, but then as he moves away, it immediately goes away. And nobody else is hearing the same thing because they're beaming it directly towards you, or probably right from above, that sort of thing. You know, that could be, you know, something that would happen in the future. I don't really see us. I see us adding more speakers to the ceiling. I don't actually see anybody, that many people actually doing it. But I think that's what I think they're kind of, they've roped their cart up to that horse, and they're going to ride it for a little bit longer. But I don't really feel like we're going to be able to put very many more speakers in our home theaters for very much longer.
That's where I came up with the idea with floor. I mean, we're running out of speakers everywhere else.
I just don't really see how much more they can do. I see them changing speaker technology so that it gives us higher fidelity with the speakers positionings that we currently have. But speaker technology, aside from folded ribbons, hasn't really changed that much in 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly things that can be done. They just, you know, it's just so hard to do them while not messing up the experience for everybody else. That's where you run into the issues.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've explained that myself. It's like the reason you have as many is so that other people can enjoy what you're doing. It's like, otherwise you either get two sets and don't move, or put on a pair of headphones. But
right. Right.
But we're never really off topic because we're talking about movies and
AV.
So,
that's true.
Yep.
Yes, it is an AV podcast, I'm led to believe. I've never actually heard it.
What's that?
I've never actually heard it, but
oh.
And I want your listeners, and if they're all my listeners and they know me when I'm joking yeah. and stuff like that, but the reality is I have three young kids, you know, 16, 14, and 10, and I just very rarely have time for anything other than them. It's, you know, so podcast listening is something that I just don't do very often, and consuming media of any type. I mean, Rob's always talking about whatever TV shows. Like,
I'm the same way. My wife, yeah. My kids are older now, and now we're watching shows. We never watched Breaking Bad. Our kids were younger. Yeah. There's a section of TV, and it's like from 2000 to like 2018 where we couldn't binge, we couldn't watch stuff.
Right.
And I completely understand. I know what you're talking about. And it's like, I feel bad about like AV Rant. Like I didn't start until like, what was that? Jurassic Park came out.
A couple of years ago, I guess.
Yeah, a few years ago. I know it was like this time of year. Yeah. And I was just getting into podcasting. Listening to it, I mean. You know, and I had no idea I'd be doing one someday. But it's, you know, it's... I found it, and hey, I listen to you guys all the time. I heard you actually said something about that this week about how like some listeners might just go to their question.
Yeah, Rob, like, Rob was talking about that. Yeah.
And I'm like, I listen to your podcast. Honestly, and I'm not trying to just like blow smoke here. I listen to your podcast a couple times a week because honestly, I'll be driving around and I don't hear everything. You know, because you're not paying attention 100%. Right. Somebody starts talking and, yeah, you know, much like people are probably doing to us right now.
You lost my podcast. I'm sorry, sir. And thank you. Thank you for sure. I do appreciate it. And when I first started my podcast, at the very, very beginning, another person started the AV podcast at the same time and they wanted to collaborate. And I didn't say no, but I never answered their email. So I guess in essence,
kind of.
I wasn't worried about, I wasn't jealous or I wasn't trying to shut the guy down or anything. But, you know, I was so new at it and it was brand new and I had very little experience and, you know, I just didn't have the wherewithal to even think about being on somebody else's podcast. And this is something that people do all the time in podcasts is they go on each other's podcast and help cross promote, which is a good thing.
Right.
This industry, podcasting, is not so super saturated that we're cannibalizing each other. It just doesn't, it's just not the case. People who listen to podcasts and listen to a lot of them.
Right.
So I'm happy to have my listeners come to you and your listeners, if they would like to spend 2 hours with me and Rob answering viewers or listeners questions about their home theaters and sometimes just whatever. Somebody asked me what kind of coffee I drank the other day. So
yeah,
I'll
you
answer
had that,
that
one
too.
So I didn't know we could ask that.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. I got I haven't answered him yet, but I got the most massive email about why I needed to switch what kind of coffee I was.
Oh, jeez.
So, which is great. You know what? It's great. That's interaction. People are passionate. I'm passionate about stuff too. If you're passionate about coffee and you have a real reason why you think I need to be drinking a different coffee, I'm happy to hear about it because I like to be passionate about stuff as well. And AV is one thing. Movies is one thing. So I'm very passionate about. I love talking about it. And it's a lot of fun. So I could do this. I love doing the podcast. I love doing it with Rob. I try to keep it to 2 hours. If it was Rob's up to Rob, we would answer every question every week.
I know.
It would be like 3.5 to 4 hours of podcasting in one go. And I just.
Hey.
I just can't. I'm sorry, Rob. I start to get my after about 2 hours, my brain goes, all right, Tom, listen, for real, we're going to sleep up here. All right. All this up here is going to sleep.
Then you and I can't go over 2 hours because we're approaching and Rob will get upset. no, I'm just kidding.
If I used to start earlier with Rob, I was going to try. I'm going to try to start a little bit earlier with him so that we can get.
We have the same schedule at Brightside Chat. You and I talked, and you do Tuesday nights. I do Wednesday night, but we do two podcasts, and they're each about an hour to an hour and a half each. And it's like, and the one that we do first goes out Thursday morning. It's a timely one, so I have to produce that and get it out by the next morning. It's like, whoosh. But hey, I enjoy it. It's a new thing to me, but getting back to the movie.
Yes. Oh, right.
Remember Jurassic Park? That was good. Remember 93?
That's a great movie, man. Why don't you watch that again sometime?
Exactly. No, I might need to go watch it quick.
You could have watched it. I think you could listen to this podcast and watch it at the same time and then finish the podcast afterwards.
Exactly.
Let the podcast keep going.
Oh. Couple of quick scenes. The T-Rex chase.
Yeah.
When, you know, Malcolm's doing the must go faster.
Must go faster, right?
That's at 1 hour, 20 minutes, 55 seconds.
Things in the mirror might maybe be closer than they appear. Look at that great, great scene.
Yeah.
Just so good. It makes no sense. Every time that thing, like, sneezes, all the water shakes in the car, but somehow it snuck up on them. It put on its sandals or its little slippers.
There's a good base there when Malcolm's in the Jeep by himself and he hears the, you know, what I thought was really cool was the, right after he says must go faster, the camera goes, you get the point of view of the T-Rex and his screams are all coming from behind you.
Yeah. Yes. I noticed that too.
Really, really cool. Yes. Really good engagement of your non-existent rear channels that you.
I'm sure most of it's coming out of the side surrounds anyways, but,
yeah.
No, but seriously, yes, I noticed that too when I was watching it this time. That's something that I don't know that was initially in there. I can't tell you if the older mixes had it or not, but it definitely has it now. And I am of two minds of this. I think that's great. First of all, technically, I think it's great. It is, in some ways, a little jarring because as you switch that point of view, you know, having those screams coming from behind you can, in some ways, in some instances, break the immersion a little bit because you're switching points of view. If you're not switching points of view, then it all stays very consistent. There's quite a few music DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff that I've seen where they have done, essentially the guitarist goes in the left speaker, the bass goes in the right, or maybe the lead goes in one and the rhythm guitar goes in the other. And then everybody else gets kind of mixed around, as it goes, but they always stay there no matter where the shot is. Then I've had other ones where wherever the shot is determines where the music is coming from, out of the
speaker. That's gonna sound weird.
And it does. It does. And to me, having that camera flip right there can be a little bit of that second thing. It can be a little bit jarring to hear the cries that you were hearing very loud from in front of you suddenly come out behind you. But the way they combat that is the T-Rex is roaring and he's very loud in front of you. So Malcolm sounds very quite relatively behind you, and it doesn't take you out of it, but for me it comes a little close, and I could see somebody sitting in the editing room going, nah, make it all come from the front. Okay, now put the screams in the back. I don't know, man. We're gonna have to get Spielberg in here, take a listen to this. I don't want to make this call on my own. I could see how that could maybe have been a close call on somebody's part.
It could have been. I think it's, I mean, but if it is a close call, I think the decision is this is a little more fun. And I think a lot of this, and I think not to go off on another tangent, but I think Netflix does a great job with their sound mixes. And I think it's a mandate in their shows because they have some of the best Atmos, like, because they use so much discrete stuff.
Right.
And sometimes it is. It's a little too distracting. Like, they'll have conversations, and it'll be a guy on the left rear and a guy in the front right. And you're like, no, can we get them both on screen? Because I'm tired of him being back there. But it is. And I think that's to your point, is sometimes that is distracting. But when it's done right and done subtly and in a right way, it makes that the home theater owner appreciate everything they have.
Yeah, and of course, horror movies is where this really shines. Whenever you're and you can make the case that there are a lot of horror elements within Jurassic Park, just a sign of the times. A lot PG-13 today looks a lot different than PG-13 did back then. But you know, this movie is scary. You know, it is scary, and using those surrounds effectively really does put the user off balance and can give them that sense that they don't know what to expect yet. So in a scene like this, you know, I agree, it's more fun. I do think it's more effective too, in many, many ways. So I'm always laughing whenever I see that mirror. I can't not laugh. It's just such a well done interaction between the dinosaur and everybody else. And again, writing. I'm going to harp on the writing a little bit here. You know, Malcolm, he's got a broken leg or whatever, but somehow he's able to push his way all the way to the front of the car, shift him into first or something, so they can't go 35 miles an hour. Hey, I'll tell you what, man, I haven't met a car yet I can't get up past 35 miles an hour in first gear. It doesn't exist.
No.
So I don't know what gear he shifted them into, but unless it was neutral.
That would either be first or third. Yeah. So in third, no problem.
Right. But who cares? You know, at this point, who cares? You get this, you understand what's happening. He's stopping the car from going as fast as it needs to go.
Right.
And that's all that really matters. Who cares if technically it works or not? But it's such a fun scene. Right before that, where the lawyer gets eaten, I find that to be a more troubling scene. It's like, you know, the guy has gotten basically...
Must have enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I don't think he was in there for that one. But he... that character just got absolutely... like, it's like Spielberg must have been going through... Spielberg must have been going through a divorce or something, because, man, that lawyer did not get any love in that movie whatsoever.
No.
The guy didn't get a good death. I mean, he never got a compliment. He was always shown as being insanely stupid. I'm like, I have known a lot of lawyers in my time, and none of them were this dumb. Like, not a single one was as stupid as this poor man was. But, you know, the chase scene, of course, is iconic, and it's super well done. There's not enough good things to say about it.
Yeah. Subtly, I thought the Brachiosaurus singing scene.
Yeah.
Did you notice how that panned out a little bit more than I'd seen in the past? They're at Lex and Dr. Grant and what's the kid's name?
I forget. I don't know. Crispy,
he's in the tree. They're all up in the tree, and you can hear them off in different channels.
Right.
But then when the camera pans onto them, it really filled the room of those, you know, that singing Brachiosaurus.
Whale song,
I thought that was really cool.
That is a nice, that, you know, that's another thing. You got to give the audience a break. You know, you can't just have wall to wall action. You got to give them a second. And this is a good time for character development, and you see that. You see that with the girl who goes from being terrified of dinosaurs to, you know, starting to understand them better.
Yeah, getting sneezed on.
Right.
Petting them,
that's right. But that scene is a very interesting one for me in my kids were watching it with me, and somebody's like, why are they going back up a tree? Like, can't the T-Rex just pull them out? I'm like, shh. Don't think about it too much. Yeah. You'll hurt your brain. Not only that, did anybody explain how the dinosaur They went down a wall that was at least as tall as that T-Rex. How did he get up there? Let's all talk about that. Because if he didn't climb a tree to get up there, then what, did he jump? I mean, let's...
Right.
Don't worry about it. It's a magic tree.
They're clearly your kids.
Yeah. You know, so, but yes. And again, plot be damned. This is just a fun scene that where you get to see a the dinosaurs in a different light. You know, they're up in a tree that's supposed to be, at least from what I can, what I understand, they're still in the T-Rex enclosure at that point, right? They haven't left to go anywhere else.
They hadn't gotten through the electric fence yet.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right.
So unless they went through that drainage thing that she was hiding in when he was in the, and then came out on the other side, are you telling me that T-Rex was stored with the brachiosauruses? Cause that seems like poor planning on somebody's parts.
Yeah.
So, well, I assume that there was maybe a scene cut out or something that showed them going to a different place. I have read this book, by the way.
So did I.
I can't remember a thing about it other than the fact that there was the aviary part of it with the, that they put in the second movie. Or third? Second? I don't remember.
Yeah, but, I thought with the, velociraptors. Pterodactyls, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which were way more terrifying than...
Well, I thought the river scene was, in the book was terrifying, too, with the T-Rex coming down with just his eyes sticking out.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? That was, the book was awesome.
So, I'm sure you know this, but that last scene, was not supposed to ever have a T-Rex in it. You know, the ending of the movie was not supposed, it was supposed to involve just velociraptors and them, but the T-Rex had come out so good.
Yeah.
And everything, and it looked so awesome that they just like, oh yeah, the T-Rex is in here. I'm like, yeah. So did he come in through the service entrance? How did he get in this room? I saw a lot of doors and none of them were big enough for a T-Rex.
But... Right. And now that's the scene where you can say he's shaking the water, the cup of water, and he sneak, but in there, they're running around trying to get away from velociraptors. But surprise, surprise, this 20-foot tall T-Rex is indoors.
Indoors, yeah. just slithered its way through the front door there. You didn't see it. Don't mind me.
Yeah, don't mind picturing me. Him like a chipmunk trying to get through a little hole in the wall. He's like,
but I gotta say, I don't think it was until this last watching where I thought to myself, how the heck did that T-Rex get in here?
Right.
I have seen that movie so many times and never once did I think to myself, no, I was like, the T-Rex became the hero of the movie. The T-Rex had an arc.
Right.
I mean, even the dinosaur had an arc. He went from being a killing machine to saving them. And you're like, the velociraptors are tearing him up. You're like, hey, get off that T-Rex. Wait a second. He ate a lawyer like 8 hours ago. You guys would have... Now we're on his side? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah. And like you said, when they leave, they close the two double doors behind them and run down the stairs. But there's no hole in the wall.
You thought somebody would have noticed a T-Rex coming. Right. Talk about surround sound. Where was my surround sound for the T-Rex breaking in? Did he pick the lock? Is there a hole in the ceiling he dropped down in? His little fingers. I know. Aside from the whole movement thing, right, which is a fantastic, fantastic horror element in this movie that makes literally zero sense the minute that you spend any time thinking about it. It's like, how is he navigating his way through a forest? Wouldn't he walk into trees constantly? I mean, they're not moving. Whatever. Just a cool thing that I watch that and I'm like, this is dumb, but it is so awesome. I'm so happy it's in here.
Yeah, it's just home theater fun.
Right.
This is one of those movies that even in 93 when I saw it in the theater, I had a home theater in my living room, and these are those movies that you can't wait for them to come out so that you can then experience it at home.
Right.
I've said this before in the podcast. I haven't said it to you. Do you find that these home theater mixes are just that much better than a theater, because it's just more intimate. The sound is made for you, right, for your seat.
I don't know that I would necessarily say that the movies I've seen in the theater that I've come home, of course, there's a huge, time delay, but that I've come home and thought, wow, this sounds better at home. There are a lot of things about watching things at home I certainly prefer over watching things at the movie theater. I mean, clearly,
you don't like people.
That's part of it. Yes. I have yet to have been
I'm the
to a
same
movie.
Way. That's why I could say that.
I have yet to have gone to a movie theater in the last 5 years where somebody hasn't turned on the phone at some point to check their Facebook.
I had a guy
whatever.
Sitting next to me, took his shoes off barefoot.
And I wouldn't touch anything in the theater before COVID-19.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not going to start now. And walking around barefoot is not going to be one of those things. So. The mixes are different. There is no doubt about that. It is remixed before it is put onto a disc to send out to you. So it is, I think, a fact that it is a mix that was made for you. I think they are trying to give you the same experience that you should have gotten in the theater, provided that you were sitting in the right seat and everything else.
Right.
But that's not always the case. Right? That's not always right. The case. We don't always get that option of sitting in that good seat or, being around people. I mean, I do miss going to movies and like Blockbuster, people are excited about it. Yep. Like Mortal Kombat, when Mortal Kombat came out, it was the first really decent video game movie. And all of us guys who, spent so many quarters playing Mortal Kombat, went to see that movie and lost our minds. So that was the best thing ever. People are cheering. People are yelling. People are having a great time. I do miss that to a certain extent. But the older I get, the less I can tolerate all of that. And I certainly am not going to movies the week of anymore. I think The Last Skywalker or whatever. What is that? It's called
the latest one.
Yeah.
Oh,
The Return of Skywalker, Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah,
I just did
fall,
every single one.
Honestly,
of
in my opinion, it was a little bit more of a fall, maybe a stumble. Maybe it was pushed down the stairs. I don't really know, but I don't want to call it a rise. So that's that kind of cured me of going to movie theaters anymore. I've said it on my podcast quite a few times. With a theater like the kind of theater that AV Rant helps you build, you should only go to movies to support or to as a quote unquote vote, as far
right.
as I'm concerned.
Yep.
You go to a movie because you want to tell the studios you want more movies like that made. I did that for Wonder Woman. I did that for Deadpool. I did that for Black Panther.
I know you waited on Infinity War?
I did wait on all of those movies. I did not, because I didn't feel like I needed to. I don't think
for
I
a month you were like, no spoilers. I was like, oh my God, the willpower.
I am so good at not getting spoilers. I can read a part of a headline and see a spoiler coming and then stop reading. It's insane. I am very good at not spoiling things. And then, like I say, when I watch a movie, I kind of turn my brain off, and a lot of times I'll forget the things that I had read beforehand.
Right.
But. Yes. I'm not going to be that guy who's going to be like, oh, you spoiled this for me. You're no longer my friend. I just, try to whatever. But with Marvel, I've only ever seen Avengers and Avengers 2, I think, in the theaters. I don't think I saw any of the other Marvel movies in theaters. I don't think I saw a single other one other than Black Panther.
I love the midnight shows. Back when they used to be at midnight.
Right. The night
I did Independence Day at a midnight show.
I did as well, I believe.
Did you?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And
I saw Godzilla there too, the one with Matthew Broderick.
Yep. I saw the first Hulk movie in a midnight show, and that was the first movie that I was like, why did I go to the midnight show for this? The Ang Lee one?
Yes, my wife was pregnant with my first son. And we were going to see every movie we could before we had our first child. And we went and saw that movie. And I came home with the first and only migraine I've ever had was from Ang Lee. Thank you, sir. That movie was such a disappointment. The Hulk scenes were so good. I'm like, this is a 10-minute movie with a... And I love Jennifer Connelly. I will watch her read the newspaper. but, wow, that movie was just... trash.
Yeah, that was a rough one. And especially at a midnight show where you wait, you stay up all night, and then you're walking out at 2 in the morning, like me and my buddy that we used to go to all of these movies together, and we walked out and we're like, I don't know, we'll talk tomorrow.
I saw Phantom Menace at a midnight showing as well.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that. I saw all the Star Wars at midnight shows because before Phantom Menace came out, they did the original trilogy. So we were able to see that, and it's like, but I love that experience. I love all the Lord of the Rings movies. I did midnight shows, and just the crowds. I'm not one to dress up. I'm not, but I like being around those people. And the Lord of the Rings ones, people were dressed to the nines, and it is an experience.
The midnight showing
fun.
Crowd is going to be a completely different crowd than the people that are going to be going at, 3 o'clock matinee on Saturday, which is when I would go see it because it's cheaper. Because I'm dragging along, and because I'm dragging along 4 other people most of the time, which makes it prohibitively expensive to really go see very many movies a year, at least in my budget. So, having a good home theater makes it so that you don't have to go see movies if you don't want to.
Yep.
But more than that, it allows you to watch movies in the way that you actually want to watch them, which includes potty breaks, which includes adult beverages. It includes, popcorn if you want it or whatever, pets curled up on your lap. I mean, there's all sorts of benefits of doing that.
I actually got to experience when you said like is usually a time gap.
Yeah.
So Bloodshot came out in the theaters back in March. It was literally the last movie I saw in the theater because the theater closed that night when we saw it. It was the Tuesday night in our area. Showcase had just said they were shutting down their theaters that day. I already have my tickets, and they're like, no. They said they were closing at 8. My movie was at 7. And they're like, no, you're good. We just can't let us start movies. Okay, cool. It came out on video on demand the following Tuesday.
Right.
So I bought it because I wanted to have that back and forth and be in 1 week after seeing it. And I saw it twice in the theaters, as a matter of fact. But 1 week after seeing it in the theater, it was a big difference.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, it was very it's just that like you said, it's like if you have the perfect seat in a theater, then maybe you can get it, but I've been to Dolby Cinema theaters and I go in the middle of the day, nobody else is there, so you get that perfect seat. It's still not the same as our theaters. Right. I don't think, because they're just further away. It's harder to get that localized sound. And
well, there's that, and then there's also the fact that they're trying to pressurize a room that size. And if you're by yourself, they've also taken into account the other people that would be in that room as part of their equations as far as how they set up the speakers. But, they're also, more often than you think, they are worried about sound transmission through walls into other theaters. So whereas your blockbuster movie, when it first comes out, might be playing pretty close to full reference volume, a lot of times it's not. And because if it were, then people who are in the theater next door would be hearing it through the wall, and that would break their immersion. So you can really control that exactly when you get home. I can't imagine how much different the audio mix must have been between the theatrical release and the streamed release of Bloodshot, since they were so close together. I mean, I'm sure that could have been done as a completely new mix, but I imagine that it would have been very, very close, if not exactly the same.
The mix might be exactly the same. I just think the translation in your theater, because your speakers are closer and you're able to pick up on those subtler noises that maybe you couldn't have heard.
right.
in a theater. You yeah. know, that's what I mean by that. Yeah. Like those little, like I said, the construction workers you saw in Jurassic Park, and you can hear little things.
Right.
You know, it's in having it fresh a week away, you know what to listen for, and you know, and then, oh, I didn't hear that last week or whatever. And it's a little bit more immersive for me, I felt, with that week, you know, only a week apart. But
cool.
Yeah. Any other scenes on Jurassic Park? I think we've kind of, I mean, Rob's going to get mad if we go too much longer.
Yeah. He's Canadian. Mad yeah. Canadian is not exactly the same as, well, it's not the same as anything else, to be honest with you.
No, I'm no, part Rob Canadian. Will get my mad. Grandmother's from Canada, so.
You know, every scene in this movie is fairly iconic. I guess, you know, has something to be said about it. You know, from the terrible wig on the actress, the stunt woman that was playing Laura Dern as she was running through the I think that might have not even been the woman that was playing her as she was running through those trees, getting away from the velociraptors, to just how beautifully everything was shot, no matter what was going, how minor it was that was going on. You know, I could talk about plot points all day long. You know, Nedry doesn't know how to get to the docks. Really? How?
How do you get there?
You're telling me this is the first time he's ever driven himself to the dock? And when he was going before, I mean, clearly this is a place he's been before. I mean, how many places are there to go on this island?
How about you building a sign with an arrow on it? You don't put one screw in the middle.
That's how I build everything. One screw in the middle.
Yeah, but he spun the arrow around like it was a board game. Like, hey, two screws solves that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's just.
Yeah.
Okay, dog. Are you gonna say, just look at her. What a goofball. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so many little things to nitpick, but the fact, it's almost like, you'll love it so much, you can't help but see all the little imperfections. But the reality is that I have owned this movie in almost every format that it has existed in. Unless it came out on Laserdisc, I have owned everything. Because I know I had it on DVD. I definitely had
Laserdisc.
It on VHS. So I didn't have Laserdisc.
I did. I had it on Laserdisc.
I've had it Blu-ray, and I've had it, you know, 4K Ultra HD.
Yep.
So this is a movie that I will continue to own in almost any format that it comes out on. So, you know, me bagging on it, please don't take that as a sign of me hating it. It's just me having fun. I mean, it's part of the fun too is when you experience a movie like this and love it so much is being able to talk about all the little silly things that happen. I mean, talk about movies that are imperfect that are still loved. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is never going away, and that movie is far from a perfect anything, except for Tim Curry, of course, who is perfect in all things.
Yeah.
We can all agree on that.
Oh, I love Tim Curry. I was just talking about him the other day and his role. I was on Twitter about Psych. You ever watch that show?
I don't remember him being on Psych. I didn't watch too many seasons of that. It's sort of.
I think it was season 2, episode 1, if I remember right. But he plays a. American Duos is the name of the episode. You'll love it because it's classic Tim Curry, and he is he's just a riot. He names, remember the car was named the Blueberry?
Yeah.
He's the one that named it.
Okay.
On the show.
I just haven't seen that. I watched it live. Well, not live, but
yeah.
when it was.
My kids got me into that, as a matter of fact. And all the 80s references, I would have to tell them what they meant. But yeah, we got into that.
Hard.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay. I can watch it there.
Yeah. Check out American Duos. I think it's season 2, episode 1.
What were we watching the other day? Oh, we had our kids watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh.
Everyone's about to stop the movie and tell them what was going on. Just tonight before I did this podcast, we were watching, like the Saturday Night Live Mother's Day episode, the retrospective one that they do.
Yeah.
And they were watching, it was a scene with, what's his name? The anal retentive chef. And he's doing this thing. My kids are like, this is the least funny thing I've ever seen. I'm like, you do not understand. this killed.
Yeah.
this kill, this guy made a career out of this. And they're like, yeah, it's not funny. I'm like, it really is. You just don't get it.
Oh, yeah. So, kids don't appreciate it.
Nah, that's all right, though. We don't appreciate my any of the things my kids like.
Nope. No, we're old.
That's so what? So normally on this podcast, what do? You just talk about the movie, and then what?
I just talk about the movie. I blast through the movie. I talk about the different scenes that I liked, and basically, you know, that's it. When I first started, I was trying to figure out my like find a groove,
a hook.
And some weeks it's like the title is usually this is called week 20 of 2020. And the way I came up with that is this is what I did in my theater for the week. Right. And I'll just blast out a bunch of stuff. And what I've been doing is picking a movie like this, and I'll go through all the different scenes that really just struck me. Hmm. And just talking about movies and having fun in the theater. And, you know, and now I'm starting to take I'm getting questions, not about AV, but different movies. Hmm. So, like, you guys do, like, how to set up the theater. I'm getting questions of, did you see this movie? Check out this scene. Check out, which is, it's kind of fun. It's really, it's interactive. It's become more interactive. My original idea was like a 20 minute to a half hour long. Just talk about the movie and that's it.
Or now 2 hours I'm getting and 17 minutes. You choose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's different when you do
it. This might be a multi-part one. You'll have to release it in seven parts.
Yeah. No, I just put, it's a conversation and that's what's fun. It's, I mean, you're literally in your theater while we're having a conversation.
I am. And I've spent this whole time realizing that my kids had opened the window and now all my AC has gotten sucked out and I'm roasting. I've got sweat rolling down my face as I'm talking to you, but that's okay. That happens in Hero. I live in Florida, so I sweat all the time anyways.
I stalked you once. You had a thunderstorm go through and I was watching you live on YouTube. You were like, and you could hear it in the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I happened to be sitting, I think I was here in my podcast area, and I grabbed the computer and I looked at Florida where the thunderstorm was.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, I got a ballpark on where he must be.
I have never really, like, Rob's super private about that stuff, but I say my last name all the time. You know, I try not to say my kids' names, though. I sometimes do. People are going to find you if they want to find you anyway, so I don't really, I don't worry about it too much. But yes,
I've met a listener once. I remember that.
I've met a listener quite a few times. I've met quite a few listeners. I just met one recently here in town.
Didn't you go to lunch with him or something?
I went to lunch with him, yeah. Him and his wife. They're lovely. And I've had people, I think a couple of years ago, I had a guy come in town and he met me for a drink someplace and we hung out in Perth. I met a guy, took me out to dinner or lunch someplace. I don't really remember. It was very nice, you know, and we just talk AV, man. We just sit down and talk AV. I just normally talk about their theaters and stuff like that. It was sometimes it's really comfortable and cool, and sometimes it's like, am I going to have to carry this whole conversation? Because I feel like I'm carrying the whole thing. But okay. But I don't feel, and I know you kind of talked me up a little bit here, but I'm just a guy with a podcast. The kids get, you know, I did listen to you talk about me on your podcast. I actually played it on my computer while I was doing dishes. So my 10-year-old, and I think I talked about this on Navy Ramp, the 10-year-old comes in and goes, "Daddy, is that guy talking about you?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, you must be famous." I'm like, "Yeah, I am now famous."
Yeah.
Thank you. All thanks to this gentleman right here. Thank you.
I have a podcast and somebody else with a podcast talked about me.
He walked away so impressed. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's good.
So you impressed my 10-year-old. Good on you.
There you go. Actually, it was you that impressed your own 10-year-old, just me talking about you.
He doesn't understand that.
So one other scene I was going to mention now here's one that I thought was a little bright. I think you'll know what I mean. The kitchen and the velociraptors.
Okay.
But I thought it was appropriate. But like you said, at the beginning of the movie, the velociraptors are so loud.
Right.
But that kitchen scene and all that metallic, it actually comes through, but it hurts. Like, you can hear the reverberation off of the metal in that room. when the velociraptors are screaming, like they're doing their, you know, in that kitchen, I thought it was really, really bright, but it was appropriately so.
At that point, I had turned it down. I will be honest and say that I think I started watching the movie at right around like negative 3 dB off of reference, maybe negative 4 dB off of reference. By that time, I was probably down to negative 7.5 or 8 off of reference, full reference volume. That scene, as far as sound goes, there is so many things, so many different pieces of it going on, and you can hear where each piece is supposed to be coming from, and it centers you within the space where the camera is. The sound of the one thing that always bothers me is when you see somebody do something and the sound doesn't match. You know, it's clear that some Foley artist has put in the sound afterwards. So when the boy. This is one thing I was watching specifically for. When the boy, whose name nobody can remember, Tim. Hides back against that thing, and there's the spoons right next to him, and they rattle, and he grabs them.
Yep.
It's perfect. It stops perfectly, exactly where it should, and the sound sounds absolutely perfect. The metal as they lean against it, and it bows in, it makes that sound. I don't know if they recorded it directly from that or whatever, but that sounds perfect. There's just so many things about that scene. I mean, it is terrifying. It is terrifying. My 10-year-old was not happy, but he left the room actually. So I guess he was happy after that, but he was gone. He's like, I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy. I'm like, no, you don't. Just go. So, but that scene is terrifying, and it's so well done, and it's because of the sound. Yes, yeah. There's velociraptors in there, but it's because of the sound that is scary. The sound that they make, the sound that they don't make, the clicking of the claw on the ground is just it all adds to that feeling of dread that you get knowing that they're being stalked, they're being hunted by these vicious creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always said, when I started this podcast, one of the first things I said was sound. I love the idea. I heard it a long time ago that sound is 70% of a movie.
Yeah.
And that gets into the whole John Williams thing and how the emotions are all built off of that sound, even to the point, like you said earlier about that movie that had the no sound in it.
Right.
Was it that Mel Gibson one?
Yeah, Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts.
It was a conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory, yeah.
Is that what it was?
That's what it was, yeah.
Yep. But yeah, so sometimes absence of sound is great, but it's the only reason it's great is they've used a lot of sound to build you up to that point and then taken it away.
The absence of it is supposed to leave you hanging. I mean, what's worse in a horror movie than that little as the sound has gone down to really, really low, and you're like, it's not much sound. Something's going to happen. You're waiting for the big bang when something jumps out, the jump scare. And there's nothing there's very few real jump scares in this movie. There's the goat leg hitting the roof and the T-Rex coming through the top and stuff like that.
The big jump scare, and I actually wrote it down, 1 hour, 43 minutes, 50 seconds. We're back in business and the velociraptor comes up from behind Laura Dern.
Right.
And that's a jump scare, and that's a lower volume level of sound, and then all of a sudden, like, the room is filled, the score comes, everything comes up, and you get that, and then it slows back down, and you think she found, what's his name? It's supposed to be Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
But it's just his arm.
I kept waiting for my kids to say, is that Nick Fury? But they didn't. So I don't know if it was the hair that threw him off or what.
He looks a lot thinner. He doesn't look like himself. He has the glasses on, and he has two eyes. So it's tough to recognize.
I don't know. Maybe my kids are just not very smart. That could be it, too. But, yeah, but that scene with the in the kitchen, isn't a lot of the jump scary stuff, but it's still terrifying. You know, it's just that the use of sound to convey information between the characters and your knowledge of what it all means is what makes it so scary. So I really like, I mean, that scene's great. The use of CGI when the girl,
falls
and then looks up and they CGI her face on it. Like, if I didn't know that, I would never have seen it.
Right. Yeah. You see that in the extras.
Yeah.
In the making of it. Yeah. Nowadays, that's a nothing thing.
Oh yeah.
But back then, that was huge.
They do that on Facebook. They put Trump's face on things. I mean, that's like you could do that with, you know, with an image search,
you know? Right. Yeah.
So, but back then that was like insane. That was top of the line CGI. So to see that, now, and I mean, yes, now we can pick things apart a little bit better. Now I'm looking at a 4K transfer on a 1080p projector, which means there are some issues as far as, and I don't blame the movie for this, but there are some issues like with blacks being crushed. Just because of what I'm watching it on. So I don't,
right.
I'm not dinging the movie in any way, shape, or form for that. But I'm also not seeing everything that you're seeing on the 4K. I mean, someday I'll have a 4K. I really would rather not have a 4K projector, but someday I will have a 4K display of some sort in this room. And when I do, then I'll be ready. I will go back and watch Jurassic Park again. Yeah. Complaining all the way.
For some 4K stuff on that, it's, you know, when they're in the tree, Timmy and, the scene when they're trying to get out of the tree, I'm sorry, when they're trying to get down with the car.
Yeah.
The HDR on that, it's the way Spielberg lit that. It's like, cause you could see some bad HD, like, cause it can be so good that when it's not, you hate it because the blacks aren't as deep. Well, the greens in those trees and the highlights of that, it looks so nice.
Right.
And that the HDR on this entire movie, I thought the 4K looked really, really good.
So I'm going to ask you this because I don't either know or remember. Those are real trees, right? I mean, not the one that they shut the car down, but the ones they're crawling in, those are real trees? Or did they, are those fake? Yeah.
They shot in Hawaii.
Right.
And you know that they got hit with the hurricane.
Right.
For real.
Yes.
That's all in the extras. As far as I know, I haven't seen anything that, I'm sure there's some fake things in there.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, yeah. The one scene we haven't talked about, if we want to talk about, you know, things being not real or, you know, or unbelievable, is the car falling slowly down the tree because.
Yeah. Perfectly straight.
Never, if I will, I will go to my grave believing that that could actually happen the way I saw it in that movie, because it is too cool for it not to have happened that way. I mean, it's ludicrous. The entire scene is ludicrous, but it's just so awesome. That I don't care.
Opposite of physics. It's the exact opposite. It's like you just hit one branch, you would roll the other way. Things want to go the easiest possible way. The car's not trying to break each branch and go straight.
It's like it full on with Christine for a couple of seconds. It's like, yes. If I'm going to die, I'm taking you with me.
Right.
Okay. Jeez, calm down. Like, that kid puked in me. He's out. He's coming with me. It's nuts. I know. But that's what I'm talking about when I talk about this movie. That to me is like, the quintessential scene that describes my feeling about this movie. It's like, this is stupid and I don't care.
Right.
I do not care how stupid this is because it's too cool for me to care. So.
Right. This is what I wanted to wrap up with.
Sure.
Has nothing to do with home theater. This is one of the things I noticed seeing this in the theaters and then watching it in my home right away after, you know, back in the 90s, that final scene when they show the helicopter flying away and then the like, what, cranes or stork type pelicans, birds?
Pelicans,
there you go. And they show the birds flying and it looks so nice and graceful. And then they shoot back. The shot goes to the helicopter, and it's a disgusting helicopter. It's filthy. It's grimy. And even in the 4K, you're like, ugh. And I remember thinking back in the night, like you said when we opened this conversation about how the progression of the movie is about the money and it's about this. And
right.
And I think that that final shot is about, like, man can't do what nature does. And that's what this whole movie was about. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's how they did it. They showed the gracefulness of the birds, and then they show you this clunky helicopter. And it wasn't a plane. It was a helicopter, which by the laws of physics, helicopters aren't even supposed to work. But right. it's that helicopter just looking gross compared to the gracefulness of the birds.
Right. So that's, you know, maybe more revealing the true nature of the company that, or the dirtiness of how money corrupts that sort of thing is certainly a theme here. I mean, the whole eschewing of money by the end by Hammond, of course, is his entire arc. But he, up until the end, he's still, you know, next time it'll be perfect. Next time it'll be better. You know, there's in the book itself, he's much more of a slimy, he's not very likable, but
no.
Unfortunately they cast, I don't even know the actor's name who plays Hammond. And he's like Santa Claus.
Richard Attenborough, I think it was.
Yeah. He's insanely likable. So, and you hear his sales pitch, and when he goes from the sale-y, you know, when they're taking the ride or whatever, and then the little where they see the baby dinosaur and everything, and it's all, you know, you can feel like it's a show to a certain extent, and then they go off onto the tour, and he goes back into the office, and you see him let his guard down, and you could see that underneath that there's supposed to be this sort of, you know, cutthroat businessman type attitude, and you're like, yeah, but I still like him.
Right.
You know, he isn't quite able to transform himself into this other character, and it, rather than trying to force it, which many directors might have tried to do, I think Spielberg went, yeah, we're just going to go with this. This guy is likable. That's all there is to it. So let's just give all his bad lines to the lawyer, and then we'll have the lawyer get eaten by the dinosaur, and that'll be the end of that. So,
yeah, we go. Exactly. Well, he was a likable. That flea circus speech
right.
that he gave made him a likable character with some decent intentions.
Yes. Noble, you know, and, noble to a certain extent intentions.
Right. Like he wanted to do something for, like he tricked people with the flea circus, but now he wants to do something and something so grand that's never been done. And that you didn't even feel like he was like spared no expense was an arrogant thing. It
no.
was a look at what we've accomplished when you spare no expense.
Right.
And then it all fell apart.
Right. And honestly, I don't know that this needs to be said, but for those, you know, if you've watched this movie enough times, you hear that little exchange about Nedry saying, if you know anybody else who can do what I, you know, 2 million lines
right.
of code or whatever for what I bid on this job, you know, and that's the key.
That's the one guy he spared expense on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's how it works in these things, you know.
Right.
You ask for bids, and then somebody makes you a bid, a bunch of people make a bids, and you pick the one that's the best, what you think is going to be the best. Well, if he cut corners with Nedry, and maybe that's why everything went bad, but, you know, Nedry made the bid. He no one asked him to, you know,
right.
lowball his offer, and then he's asking for more money, and that's frankly not the way things are done. I mean, my wife works in consulting, and you can, if the scope of work changes, you can, you know, do a change of scope or work order change in order to get more money. But, you know, if you bid something for a job, no one's going to pay you more money for doing the job just because you whine about it. That's not how things work. So, I mean, it is all about money in the end, but Nedry is, you know, by far the villain of this thing, way more so than any of the dinosaurs are. And I think that's one thing that, even though the Velociraptors are, I think, supposed to be like the villains, you know, in the end, I walked away with, you know, Nedry for sure being the villain and these dinosaurs just being dinosaurs.
Right.
Even if they were, even if the Velociraptors were portrayed as being more thoughtful about what they were doing rather than the T-Rex, which definitely seemed more like, look, it's a thing I can eat. I'm going to eat it. Wow, this tastes like a car. Let me try again. It still tastes like a car.
Yeah, when he bit the tires.
Maybe this part won't taste like a car. Nope, still tastes like a car. It screams like a person, though. I'm going to try again. Let me knock it off this wall that I somehow scaled with my ninja claws.
With your little arms.
I'm going to get up there.
Oh, man. You must be a blast to watch these with. Do you point at the screen and say these, or do you
I sit there and enjoy myself. Believe me, I sit there and enjoy myself. The last time I did anything like that was Universal Soldier. Universal Soldier and Harry and the Hendersons were the two movies I saw in theaters where I talked to the screen.
Really?
I predicted everything that was going to happen right before it happened. And people were like, have you seen this movie before? I was like, no.
Nope.
No. But I've seen a movie. Therefore.
Exactly.
Therefore, I'm fairly certain what's going to happen next.
Oh, man.
It was very obnoxious and I never did it again. But for whatever reasons, those two movies, I was like, this is so dumb. Watch. Now this is going to happen. Boom. Okay.
I actually did Universal Soldier on my podcast.
Did you really?
Back, it had just come out in 4K.
Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren. Holy moly.
Yeah. And who's Roland Emmerich, I think, is the director.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. Because he had done that. And didn't he? I think he just did Midway.
Right.
Recently.
Yeah.
And I did Midway as well, and listening to his extras on both of those was really interesting. It's like, I mean, that Universal Soldier he made for like nothing.
Nothing. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Van Damme, I think it was that Van Damme's like last big budget, biggest budget movie or whatever. I mean, Van Damme did all of the cocaine and fell out of favor with Hollywood, but, you know, it's still not a bad movie. I mean, it's predictable and formulaic, but it's not a bad movie.
It's a fun action movie.
Yeah.
It's definitely leave your brain at the door, and it's just, you know, and that's
what I'm actually
looking
for, a good martial arts movie to show the kids, like a classic,
like blood sport.
Yeah.
Van Damme again.
Yeah. Van Damme again. But I mean, on Bach maybe. Something like that to show the kids, because they've never really seen they've seen, you know, Marvel martial arts. They've never seen like a real martial arts movie. So I'm going to be looking for something like that for the kids to watch. Of course, I want to do
the Bruce Lee
movie. What is it? How am I forgetting this movie? Enter the Dragon. Jeez.
There a game of something after that?
There is
or
a game. It is
like
Game
that.
Of Death. It's with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that one.
Yeah,
Kareem was one of his students.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one he died during, and they had to film things with other people or something
similar to Jason.
Yeah, I know.
Crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
All right.
So this has been. More that they say not to meet your heroes, but it worked out for me. So, where can people find you?
You can find me at the AV Rant podcast at avrant.com. And anywhere that podcasts are streamed from. If you cannot find me on your streaming service, please email me at question@avrant.com and tell me. That's where you get your questions answered too. question@avrant.com. We answer anything about your home theater. Or
coffee,
sure. Got some pretty good recipes, I suppose. You want to know anything about rock climbing? I've been rock climbing for about 15 years or something like that. So be happy to talk. Though right now, I don't know that I could climb much. I'm mostly just putting on weight during this quarantine. So we'll see. They're supposed to be opening the gym back up next month. I don't know if I'm going to go or not.
Oh.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely listen. And if you, I don't know how many listeners I have that aren't already listening to you guys, but if you are and you have any questions about your theater, definitely hit these guys up. That's awesome. I love, like I said before, I love listening. There's so much information that, and you're so entertaining with it too.
I try to be. I'm really just being me. This is, if you like what you heard here, it's like this, but instead of movies, Rob's giving you a bunch of information and I'm mostly trying to spice it up with a little bit of humor as much as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good time. I really appreciate you coming on. Can we do it again?
Sure. We can do it again. Not next week.
Not next week. No. No, I had no idea we would go this long. I told my wife, I'm like, well, we're just talking about Jurassic Park. I should be done by 11.
Yeah. Well, I told my wife, yeah, I don't know how long this podcast is, but I'll probably be done in like a half an hour, 45 minutes. So
hey.
So 2 hours and 42 minutes later, here we are. Almost done. If I can shut up long enough to let you do the end roll or whatever it is.
Yeah. So you can hit me up on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought of this podcast. Let me know what you think of AV Rant. I know I've got a lot of listeners that listen to these guys. If you're not, go over there, check them out. And please keep the questions and comments coming. I'm having a blast with it. I'm watching stuff and getting tons of scenes and information. Keep them coming. Really appreciate it. And Tom, this is truly has been awesome. I can't believe we talked almost 3 hours now. I'd love to have Rob on, but this has been a blast. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it has been fun.
Thanks a lot. Have a great week, everybody, and go push play. Hey Fred. This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.